Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moore's Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Sahaka Amana LB, and tonight we're dealing with part two, consciousness, marriage, license, and our ancient story. We'll be dealing with the following questions. Where did the ceremony of marriage come from in the first place? Where did that come from? We got the bride, the groom, we got the bridesmaids, we got the best man, we're throwing the rice, and we're exchanging rings and vows, and where did all of that come from? Number two, how do you go about getting married? What's the procedure? Number three, what part does consciousness play in your marriage? Number four, what are the benefits of marriage? Number five, what are the benefits of consciousness? Number six, where did life begin on earth? Now that's a big one. Number seven, were there ancient Egyptians in America in ancient times? Eight, what part does arithmetic play in your life? Nine, what about black interracial marriage? What about interracial marriage? 10, how do you get married without a license? And 11, when does a so-called black man decide about marriage in the first place? These are just a few of the questions that we're going to deal with here this evening. We're going to give you plenty of time to get your paper and pencil handy because I'm going to give you a book list later on in the broadcast. I want you to write the books down, the author and the title, so you can get a hold of these books from Brother Yoel. My special guest is Brother Yoel. He's supposed to be in here tonight. And so we can chop it up a bit and make sure that when we are done with this thing, we're going to convert it into a video. It'll go up on YouTube. Go ahead and click the little box there in the right-hand corner on the screen and subscribe to my channel so you can go back and get this information, because once we put this information out, then we're going on to something else. So you want to be able to go back if you miss it, or if you're working, or if you're busy, or if you got other plans for the night, you can always go back and catch this stuff later because it's right there for you to get, okay? So we're going to go into the commercial. We'll take a little quick break. That'll give you plenty of time to get your paper and pencil and everything straight, okay? So
the greatest move
let's get
you
down
can
in it.
Make beginning in 2022 is to move out of the public and into the private. That's how you get rid of student loans, child support, mortgages, foreclosures, and all this kind of business. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out my contact us form by leaving your email address, and I'll rush my free report straight to your email box. Our economy is in shambles today for people who insist on living in the public. Move into the private. Make an easy transaction. Go to www.TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out the contact us form and I'll rush you my free report. As a secured party and creditor, can you buy a home, a car, and other items you need and want? The answer is yes, and there are documents you use to do just that. Catch my radio podcast at Blog Talk Radio. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out the box with your email address that says join our mailing list, and I will send you my free report. You got credit problems? Contact me at TahakaDebtElimination.org. Let's stay in honor and get into the private.
We're back. Now, let me start off by saying that later on in the broadcast, the phone lines will be open. Press 1 on your phone. That'll give me an indication that you got something to say. The number to dial into the broadcast is 515-605-9757. Press 1 on the phone. That'll let me know that you want to talk. Okay? And that'll give me an indication once you dial that number and press 1 on the phone. That'll give me an indication that I can see you got your hand raised. Now I'll open up the phone line and let you in. All right? Now, keep in mind that next Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, me and Dr. Walter Williams will be on the air with the broadcast. So make sure y'all tune into that. And I'll put the advertisement and stuff up for that broadcast. So that's the last Sunday of this month. And let's see now. That will be on the 30th of October. Myself and Dr. Walter Williams, I'm pretty sure our brother EOL will be in on there with us, okay? Now, let's deal with question number one. Where did the ceremony of marriage come from in the first place? have you ever thought about that? Okay, we got people getting married, and the sisters, they are orchestrating the whole event. They got to get the floral arrangement, and they got to decide what church they gonna have it in, and what pastor is gonna oversee the wedding, and she wants to be in charge of getting the bridesmaids and making sure that everybody is dressed up and everybody is positioned, and the floral arrangement and the musical arrangement. All of these things have to be put in place and to orchestrate the wedding. And in a lot of cases, the brothers that are marrying these sisters, they get caught up in the shuffle, and they're looking around, and all these people is doing all these things because the wife has orchestrated the entire event. It is one of the most amazing things that you could ever see in your life. And I've had been a part of one. They want you to be the best man. They want you to, with the groomsmen, you got to go out and rent a tuxedo. You got to go get some matching shoes and all of this other stuff for this marriage ceremony that's about to happen. But what I want to do is deal with where did the ceremony of marriage come from in the first place? That's the number one question on my list. And what I'm going to do is give you a little information from a book that I have here. The title of this book is Read It Before She Does, The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman, written by Sister Scheherazade Ali. And this is what she had to say about the ceremony. She states the following. The ceremony. There have arisen endless creative expressions of how to exchange the wedding vows, and many are quite interesting. But the standard theme contains the standard American design format. Little does the black woman know that the entire wedding ceremony was taken from the white man's history of being in the cave, which is referred to as prehistoric times. It was out of the caveman period that they devised the marriage rites, and each segment of the ceremony denotes a particular aspect of their life in the cave. It has no black cultural background in it, period. Most have seen the picture of the white caveman walking with a club over his shoulder, dragging the white woman behind him. This picture is the brunt of many jokes suggesting that this is how the white man claimed his woman. The following definitions explain how they came to use the seemingly timeless marital rites. The ring. It is symbolic of the rope / cord or vine used to tie up the woman, the bride, in order to conquer her. And it was used to bind her wrists and ankles while kidnapping her from her tribe. This was done by the groom. The ring bearer is the man who went with the groom to steal the bride. He is the one who carried the extra rope. It took 2 to 3 men to pull this heist. The attendants. the best man was the man who went with the groom to steal the bride. The throwing of rice is symbolic of the rocks and stones the family of the bride threw after the groom when the bride screams, awakening her family, and they saw she was being taken. The honeymoon is symbolic of the cooling off period that followed the taking of the bride. The groom would take her up into the mountains of some far off place and keep her up there until she came into submission to him. Carrying over the threshold is symbolic of the groom carrying the bride into his cave, her new home. He had to carry her because she would not walk in voluntarily. The maiden of honor is the woman in the groom's tribe, usually his mother, or a friend who helped the new bride adjust to and learn the ways of life in the new cave. The veil came into practice around 1500 as a form of spirituality which was designed to keep evil spirits away from the face of the bride. All right, now, hold on a second, because this is a thing goes on here now. Wow. Okay. The bride used to throw her garter from around her thigh, also symbolic of the rope or ring used to bind her when she was kidnapped. But white men used to create such a brawl at the weddings, scuffling for the garter, that this practice was dropped, and the bride took to throwing her bouquet to the women who were more civilized in their participation. Few black women know what they are doing when they plan and host a big church wedding. She doesn't care. She should take the time to use her own history to have a wedding ceremony and make up her own vows. With all of the black woman's profundities about what marriage means, it is just an agreement between a man and a woman to be together and work in the interest of one. Now, I'm going to stop right there, and I wanted to get that little bit out so you know what this sister has to say about the marriage ceremony, and so you know that there's something out there that we may need to consider when we start dealing with getting married and going through the same old, putting all this stuff and spending all this money for all of these clothes and the food and the bridesmaids and the grooms and the tuxedos and the wedding dresses and the cake and the flowers. And you got to pay the pastor and get on up into the thousands and thousands of dollars. And my question is, for what? But anyway, here's the book list. Book number one, The Black Woman's Guide to Understanding the Black Man by Scheherazade Ali. Book number two, The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman by Scheherazade Ali. Number three, Blueprint for Black Power by Professor Amos N. Wilson. Number four, The ABCs of Writing Winning Business Plans by Garrett Sutton. Number five, Protecting Your Number One Asset by Michael A. Lecter. Number six, Own Your Corporation by Garrett Sutton. Number seven, Love by the Numbers by Glynis McCants. Number eight, The Secret Science of Black Male and Female Sex by T.C. Carrier. Number nine, The Developmental Psychology of the Black Child by Professor Amos N. Wilson. 10, The Magic of Thinking Big by David J. Schwartz. 11, The Huguenot Bartholomew DuPuy, His Descendants by Reverend B. H. DuPuy. Book 11, Book 12, Edgar Casey on Atlantis by Edgar Evans Casey. 13, The Barnhart Concise Dictionary of Etymology. 14, An Etymological Dictionary of the English Language. 15, Moors and Masonry by Brother Abdullah L. Tlaib Mosiah Bey. And final book is 16, The Emerald Tablet of Hermes and the Kabbalion. This is the book list, and what we're going to do is we are going to post this entire book list when we convert this video and put it up on YouTube. Right down below the video, you'll see the complete book list, so you write these books down. You can call Brother Yoel and you can get these books. But I want to deal with something else right now. And because we're going to try to answer all of the questions that we have here this evening. And one of the questions is, let's see, what part of the continent is one of the benefits of man, how do you get married without a license? Okay, we're gonna deal with that. I'm going to run a plug on that, and when we get through with that, then I'm gonna put my 2 cent words in it about the marriage license. Okay, and hold on here. Let me find this in business here, and we gonna deal with this business here. Just give me a minute. Let's see. Yeah, I do with that thing. Where you at? Okay, there go the stats. I don't want the stats. Let's see. Hold on. Keep in mind the chat room is wide open. Okay, here we go. We'll be gone for 7 minutes. Y'all pay attention to what these guys are talking about here now. We'll just hold you.
Me and Brother Rich. Say shalom, Brother Rich.
Shalom.
We are having a talk as we go into town. We're talking about a bunch of things, institutionalized Christianity, and especially this marriage license stuff. Listen, you can go out and y'all can do whatever you want, but I'm telling you right now, if you get, you know, how did George Gordon put it? He says it is, the marriage license is one of the most expensive and binding contracts.
Yes.
That there is in life. Didn't he say that?
Yes, he did.
And I'm telling you, think about it. You can be married, but don't go get the state's license. You do that, you're going to bind yourself up to probate. You're going to mess yourself up royally. Think about it. Did George Washington have a marriage license? No. Moses? Any of these founding fathers? No. The marriage license came into being because of miscegenation. They didn't want the slaves and the white woman marrying. They didn't want that. So what they did, I still don't understand that they just regulated. They charged people to get married through the marriage license. Then they found out that it's big money in marriage. And so the state, anytime it can make a nickel or dime, they just made it, they tied it to their system so that if you're not married after them, then you don't get certain benefits. What say you?
Well, yeah, the inducements that they have is you have things like tax write-offs and mm-hmm. things like that. But the thing people need to do is they need to really weigh out the pros and cons of whether or not that's to their advantage. To me, getting a $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 tax write-off or $6,000 or whatever, I think it's going to be like $13,000 next year for a couple. Containing that as a possible deduction for this year and next year and year after that isn't worth $500,000 in a state, which is going to be up for grabs during a dissolution process. It takes an average of about 15 years for an average man to recover from a divorce in this country financially.
Dang.
When he gets re-divorced, he is financially ruined mm-hmm. for about the next 15 years. People say, well, you need to get a prenuptial agreement, things like that. But those are routinely thrown out in family law cases and really are not really worth the paper they're written on, because a judge can use his own discretion as to whether or not he's going to allow that to stand.
Yeah, they'll probably say it's unfair to the woman, huh?
Sure, yeah, the woman is being pressured or coerced into signing some type of an agreement based upon her love and affection is being exploited and manipulated at the outset. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of
crazy reasons
why they're going to come up with why they're going to throw these kinds of things out. So, yeah, the best thing to do is to seriously
draw up your own contract, make an agreement.
Yeah, and if you're going to, you know, involve the state, you need to go in with your eyes wide open and know what the potential outcomes could be whenever you're forming a third-party limited general partnership with the state. Matter of fact, you better get a super king bed at the hotel for your honeymoon to invite the judge, the court clerk, and the two attorneys and other agencies that are going to be involved in your life.
That polygamous relationship.
30 years.
Yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, make sure you get a big bed. It's going to be a big party because you are marrying more than one individual.
Now, see, that's wisdom right there. And people don't get it because we're so, matter of fact, Brother Rich just used another word here this morning, institutionalized. Some people out there are so institutionalized, you can't even imagine thinking for yourself and functioning outside the box. I mean, if I give out this information right here, I'm only doing it for your advantage, your gain, because if you get, anytime you tie up anything with the state or the government of this world, you making agreements with them, you are messing yourself up royally. Just consider what I say. But if you want to, hey, go out there. If it makes you happy, if it's for you, then go do it. And somebody asked me if I got a marriage. Yeah, I got a marriage license. Sure did. Got one over 33, 34 years ago. I don't think Sister Carol is going to go. I don't think she's going to do it. As a matter of fact, she's not even that kind of woman, is she?
Absolutely not.
She ain't going away, is she?
No, she's not going anywhere.
It's just, see,
were they all like her?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? And so, it's just, it's sickening what's going on today. You save yourself because this system is not for you. Be you a male or female, is not for you. It really ain't. And, man, the value of a woman, boy, by the time she gets about 45 years old, man, her stock is plummeting, isn't it?
Oh, sure. Sure. Men are interested in building their empires.
Yeah.
They're interested in having children.
Mm-hmm.
They're interested in having their seed continue on in the generations down the road. They also want that done with economic stability as well as spiritual and physical stabilities that are provided through proper instructions and following after certain moral codes.
Mm-hmm.
That is how a man decides to build his life and his kingdom, and in a hope that that would continue on into a legacy behind him. And he's not interested in having too many other outside forces bringing pressure and influence on the decisions that he should be making freely.
That's right.
As a man who is created in the image of Yah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I hope that these sayings are sinking deep down in your heart. At least they do. At least it does give you an opportunity to have another way presented to you besides the regular old dog and pony show circus that is constantly being submitted to your minds over and over again. People trying to make you think that there's no other way to do it when they only present to you that one way, and that's the only option you got. I mean, you'll take it if you're not an independent thinker. Use some self-autonomy. Use it and live by it, and you'll find yourself more free. And mind you, you know, where the state don't have no jurisdiction, they can't regulate you. They can't regulate you. So learn and know what you're doing. There are people out here every day that are opting out of marriage with the state and just what they call so-called living together. But like I said, you know, I think it's the Ninth Amendment. It gives you the right to contract. You can make contracts and agreements and stuff, and it's binding according to the Constitution. So anyway, consider what we say. Hope you have a wonderful day.
All right. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. That's a little food for thought. And if you notice, I have told you many, many times over and over and over that the United States of is a conglomerate of corporations operating under a continuous series of contracts, commonly referred to as contract law. Now, the United States, just like the gentleman just told you, does not interfere with your right to make contract. You see, when you have finally come to the conclusion that you're going to get married, first of all, the first part of this broadcast is about consciousness. So are you conscious of the fact of your own identity when it comes to mathematics and arithmetic? Okay, and let me go over this in with you one more time now so we get this in, because we want to make sure that whoever it is that we decide that we're going to marry, let's make sure the math is right. If you will say that you was born in July, which is the seventh month, you was born on the eighth day, and you were born in 19, we'll say 1953. So when we add all these numbers up together, we'll come to the number 33. And when we add that 33, 3 plus 3, we come up with 6. So your life path number is 6. So the woman or the man that you're interested in, he should have corresponding mathematics that's going to mathematically ensure that you all are compatible to a certain extent. If you're a 6 life path number, that's a 369, okay? Your challenge numbers will be a 157, okay? So in other words, if you're a man and you meet a woman and you do the math on her and she come up to a 1 or a 5 or a 7, okay, you're going to have a problem. If you do your numbers from your month, day, and year, and you reduce it and it comes down to the number 1, your matches will be a 157. Your compatibility numbers is a 239. Your challenge numbers is a 4 and a 6. So if you meet her and she end up being a 4 or a 6, okay, mission control, you got a problem. If your life path numbers end up being a 2, then you're looking for a 248. Your challenge numbers will be a 1, 3, 6, and a 9. If you are a 3 life path number, your numbers will be 369. Your challenge will be 4, 7, and 8. If you are 4 life path number, it'll be 248. Your challenge will be 1, 3, 5, and 9. If you are 5 life path number, your natural numbers that you're looking for is a 1, a 5, or a 7. Your challenge numbers will be a 2, 4, and a 6. And once again, if you're a 6 life path, that 369, challenge numbers for you is 1, 5, and 7. If you are 7 life path number, that's 157. Your challenge will be 2, 3, 6, 8, and 9. If you're 8 life path number, that's 248. Your challenge numbers will be 379. And if you're 9 life path numbers, that's 369. Your challenge will be a 4, 7, and an 8. Okay? I just want to read that back in there to you. I've given you the science. And, of course, we want to match up with the zodiac on that as well. If you're a Cancer, then you're looking for Scorpio and Pisces, okay? If you're born in the year of the snake, it's Oxus and Rufus for you. See, all these things that you should know, and these are your ancient sciences that you used a long time ago. It's not that you're learning this stuff. It's that you have forgotten or lost the knowledge of yourself. These are things that you used a long time ago when you ruled the entire world. And these are the sciences, are just a fraction of the sciences that you use. You knew this stuff, okay, a long time ago. We're going to take a little quick break. I'm still waiting on my guests to get in here, and we'll be right back. So y'all hold on a minute. We'll be right back, okay? We'll be right back. All right, everybody, we're back. Now, let's deal with the next question. How do you get married? All right. Remember, I just got to telling you, the United States operates under a continuous series of contracts. And what you do, you formulate your own contract. Let's try some of this on for size. Let's say that you have finally come to the conclusion that you're going to get married. You and your wife is on the same page. Y'all want to be married. All right. Well, let's formulate a contract. How about this? An affidavit of marriage. Will Jane S. Doe agree to marry John H. Doe? Jane S. Doe, John H. Doe. So you draw up this contract. At the end of your contract and all you, what you all are agreeing upon is written in that contract. The date, the time, your marriage vows that you're going to say to one another, and you're both going to sign this contract. It's going to be dated. It's going to be stamped and notarized. Okay? Now, when it comes to the marriage ceremony, and by the way, we're going to make multiple copies of this thing, but when it comes to the actual ceremony, you two are going to exchange vows. Now, keep in mind, there's no minister present. She's going to state her position, and you're going to state your position right off the very contract that y'all sat down and created together. But she has gotten all of her family members and friends to come in and sign a book. They put their name, they can put their email address and phone number on the book, and that's from her side. Now, on your side, you got the same thing. You want all your friends and buddies and stuff just attending the wedding. They sign the book, name, email address, and phone number. And what you're going to do is you're going to take that information and run copies of off of it, and you're going to add it to your marriage contract and make sure that all your witnesses that are there that signed that book has a copy of it. You follow me? And the reason why we want to do that is in the event that anybody in your county, anybody in your city, anybody in your state has anything to say about you all not being married because we don't have a record of you, man. Hey, you don't need a record. We don't need you up in our marriage. What we have done with what we got is we went to a little small newspaper, a little magazine, whatever, and have them publish that and make it public record, and then you can go on the Internet and publish it right there on the Internet. Ta-da! That's a public record. Okay, anybody come up and say, well, we don't recognize that. That's okay. You got a lawsuit, baby boy. Go ahead and file and take them out. But anyway, that's just part of how you do that. You formulate your own contract. But let's take a look at some of these marriage statistics, and we're going to get on down into this thing. And keep in mind, when we're talking about consciousness in this particular arena, we're talking about being actually aware. We are vibrating at a higher vibrational frequency. But let's take a look at the so-called black marriage statistics. So y'all hold on a minute.
A lot of conversations about I can get married when I want to. I can get married at will. Marriage is not an issue. I'm not concerned about marriage right now. What's that? Why is that? What's driving that? And what does that look like in the black community? Now, one thing we can say with absolute certainty that marriage has declined. It's been on a decline for years. Now, according to data from the U.S. Census Bureau, it's been declining across all demographics. But this decline is more evident, definitely more evident in the black community. In 2019, only 30% of African Americans were married. Now that was compared to 48% of all Americans. So there's an 18% gap. 2019, only 30% of African Americans are married. Meanwhile, 48% of all Americans are married. Why is that so drastically different? Also, going forward in the same year, we see that half or 50% of African Americans have never been married. 2019, 50% of African Americans have never been married. and that's compared to 34% of all Americans. 50% of black African Americans never been married, compared to 34% of all Americans. What's going on in the black community? What is it? Why do black people get married at such a significantly lower rate? Is there just no one out there compatible? Is no one finding the one? Is there no woman good enough for these men? Is there no men good enough for these women? What's the deal? What's going on in the black community that makes these numbers so drastically different than the rest of America? Now, before we go further, let's take a look at the word marriage. Let's clarify what we're talking about here. There's a lot of different manifestations, a lot of different ways of doing things, a lot of different old customs and new customs that try to be old customs, but they're not old customs, but they claim to be old customs because they're new. But they don't want to do things the way that are done normally in America because we got to be different, right? So let's define what marriage is. Marriage is the legally or formally recognized union between two people. And this goes on to state that they're partners in a relationship. You know, this is a personal relationship, not just two people who say let's team. They're in a personal relationship, legally and formally recognized union between the two of them. That's what a marriage is, okay? Legally and formally recognized. All right, moving forward. What is the purpose of it? Well, it establishes rights and obligations between the two spouses. Two people got married. There's certain rights and certain obligations that are established. That's where most people stop thinking about it. They think about, you know, obligation to each other. I got to do this. I got to do that. But when we say rights, we're not just talking about rights between the two of them. There's certain other rights that are established that they are privy to because they're married. And going forward, certain rights and obligations extend to their children, their parents, their in-laws. But this is what, in the nutshell, this is what marriage is. So when I say black marriage, I'm talking about the previously stated description between two people who are black, okay? So legally formalized marriage between two black people. Now, back to the numbers. First off, there's fewer black women married. Data shows that there are fewer black women who are now married, but there are more black women than black men who have been married. And that may sound confusing. You're like, wait a minute, if they're marrying each other, how is this happening? And it's because more black women than black men are either divorced or widowed. And that widowed part is an important concern. It's something that usually is left out of the conversation. We think that a marriage only ends when two people just can't get along anymore. Sometimes one of them dies. And as we go up older in age and we see that women are outliving men and things like that, then more than likely, more of the men are gonna be the ones that died in that relationship. So you end up with what you have. So it's a twofold thing. It's divorce, which is in large part controllable. And then there's the widow part, a little less controllable. Now, to add to that, in 2019, just under half, or 48% of black women had never been married. So in 2019, 48% of black women had never been married, which is higher than the number in 2008, when 44% of black women had never been married, which is higher than the number 2005, when 42.7% of black women had never been married. You see the trend here? As time goes forward, that's more and more black women have never been married. Figure the younger women are entering that age band where they're getting counted in the statistic and they're not getting married. Why is that? What's going on? Why aren't they getting married? Is marriage a bad thing? I'm not just saying that everybody needs to get married and marriage is all great, wonderful. I'm not trying to say that. But what I'm saying is that why aren't they getting married? What's contributing to that? Is it that they want to take the time and work on themselves to build themselves in their future? Is it they don't want to marry black men, or black men don't want to marry them, or what's going on? I don't know. If you know the answer to that, let me know in the comment section. That'd be great. It'd be great to hear. I'd love to know why this is happening. So this opens the door for the next question. If these are the numbers for the women. What's going on with the men? Where are the men? And what rates are these men getting married? Where are they? What's going on with them? Great question. Glad you asked. Unfortunately, that's a little too much to put into this video. I'll make another video about that because this gets a little deep. You see, I'm a man, and I love to have these man conversations. I love to have these real conversations with other men. We meet. We do this once a month in one group. We do it weekly in another group. We have these real conversations. There's a lot of factors to go in. It goes way beyond just the statistical data. When I'm talking about the insights and the why, it's because I'm having conversations with these men. And I want to do a little something different there because a lot more needs to be found in than that. I don't have these conversations with women, but some of you do. Some of you are women. fill in the blanks for me. Let me know why the numbers for the women look like they do. And if you want to kind of tag along for some of these conversations that we're having about what's going on with black men, make sure you subscribe to the channel, because I'll be putting out content to that effect later on. It's going to get pretty deep. There's a lot of information to share. I welcome you to come along for the journey. But on that note, that concludes this video. And I'll see you on the next one. Peace.
All right. Now, that's the take from the brother on the stats. Now, let's take a look at the decline of black marriages in America. And so we want to see what's going to be said about this here business here. So y'all hold on.
Hello, I'm Samaya. You're watching African Diaspora News Channel, and today we're going to be talking about marriage in the black community. Happy spouse, happy house. First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes the baby in the baby carriage. We've all heard these quotes about being married. The thing is, marriage used to be a particularly special occasion. It still is, but according to the way a lot of people wait to get married, it just seems like the marriage rate has declined a little bit. In 2018, 20% of young adults aged 18 to 34 were married, which is a decrease in 30% when compared to 59% of young adults within the same age range being married in the 70s. So back in the 70s, we go back a few years, it seems like a lot of younger people were ready to get married. When compared to today, a lot of younger people are not looking to get married at all. And let's talk about a little bit why that is. First of all, it seems like in this day and age, in this generation, black people definitely have a fear of failure. So when you're stepping into that marriage, you're stepping into that relationship, one of the main things on your mind is going to be, oh my God, I hope I don't mess this up. So when we talk about failure, we think back to somebody's family origin and the way they were raised and the way you were grown up. Maybe you can think back to, oh, I'm so scared. I don't want what happened to my parents to happen to me. I don't know what happened to my aunts or my uncles, my grandparents. They're not married. Or maybe they did stay married, but it wasn't a happy marriage. Despite the fact that black people have this fear of failure because of the way that they were brought up and possibly bringing childhood trauma into the marriage, growing up with a certain belief that they were built up with, despite all of this, it's very, very true that black people are still marrying black people. You know, that's what we really need to focus on here. With all this controversy, there's only a 12% divorce rate within the black community, which is only 1% higher than the rest of America. And there's also, it's kind of sad to me that 50% of black Americans are unmarried, but we're also looking at the fact that a lot of black people have that fear of failure and the lack of not really knowing what it takes to be in that sort of relationship. So that's why they hold off on marrying, or maybe they may feel like the opportunity is not for them. Maybe some people don't want to marry at all. But within all of this, it is very true. In America, it shows that 29% of the black community is actually married. So let's look at this. 93% of black women are married to black men, and 85% of black men are married to black women. So where are we getting the misconception that black people are not marrying each other? Because it's very clear that we are. Black people are marrying black people. Black women love their black men, and black men equally love their black women. So that brings us together as a community, and we're able to unite. And black marriage is something that we all need to work on. Even if you feel like you're not ready for marriage, maybe you feel like you don't want to get married, you really need to work on finding that life partner and somebody that can help you grow your own family and help ultimately grow the community and just be better and productive as a society and as a whole. I just want to point out that black women kind of feel that their odds are a little bit tougher, because it shows that 35% of the college population is black Americans. And when you have one-third of black men incarcerated or in the judicial system, it's very hard to find that stability within a partner. So a lot of black women feel like it's harder for them, but they still don't give up. They still go out there. They still find a man, because it's very, very possible. And I really believe it's necessary that black women and black men, we seek each other, we look for each other, and we stand together, because that's what's going to build our community overall. No matter what anybody says about interracial marriage and all of that, black people are still marrying black people. Marriage is not something that, you know, your family should necessarily be involved in. But at the same time, it's very important thinking about your family origin and the things that you learned growing up. So we take that from what we knew as we were younger, we take that into our relationship. So you don't need your family to be a part of the relationship, but it's very, very evident that what we learn from our families is what we grow into and what we become. Me personally, my parents were married when they had me. So personally, I wouldn't imagine leaving the hospital with a child and not leaving with my husband. That's something for me that's just not acceptable. I would never accept that. My parents were married when they had me. So to me, that's very, very, that's a core value to me. That's my family origin. So I will not get pregnant until I am married. I will not get married until I find the correct partner. And that's something that a lot of women really need to work on and stick with, because there's the baby daddy, baby mama rate is very high. The reason that is maybe because a lot of people have so high standards. They have these high standards and they built them up, and then, you know, next thing you know, you're settling because you have this unrealistic expectation of what you expect out of somebody or something, and you settle, and that's how you end up in this position to where now I'm alone, now I'm single, I'm a single parent, or however the situation may be. The lack of being a decent partner due to how you grew up and the skills that we need to maintain a healthy relationship, that's something that was not really taught within the black community. So I had a chance to talk with this married couple. They've been married for 12 years, and after 10 years of their marriage, they made the decision to go from monogamy to polyamorous relationships. When I talked to this couple, it was very interesting to me that they were able to make that decision together in a community where infidelity is very, very common and financial stability is something that everybody looks for. This couple was able, despite the husband's family origin, because that's very important. He grew up in a family where the men cheated. He grew up in a family where he knew, okay, this is what I know. The men in this family, they cheat on their wives. So him knowing that, he had sort of a roadmap or a plan of what he didn't want to do, which made it able to change that. So a lot of people, they have the lack of representation, but that lack of representation can also be your motivation to say, I know what I'm going to do and stick with that. So this couple here, they've been together for all these years, and they made this decision to move into a polyamorous relationship. That decision to me, it just shows that's real marriage. You make the decision to be together and you follow through with it no matter what. You don't leave each other, even though it's a challenging decision. Just the fact that they stay together, that's very important. They knew that they weren't going to leave each other. And this man knew that within his family origin, that's what his family origin was. And he knew that he did not want to be like that. Healthy marriages grow healthy families. Healthy families grow healthy communities. And that's really what we need within the black community. So when we're talking about marriage in the black community, we need to just point out the fact that there is not a roadmap. There's a lack of direction on what we should be doing and what it takes to actually maintain a healthy relationship. When it comes to that, that's what we need to really look at as a community. In this generation, a lot of young adults do not want to get married. And that's simply because of the fact that what representation do we have? The representation we have is little to none. Despite the fact that black people are marrying black people, you don't see that in the media. And if you do see it in the media, it's this kind of image that's conveyed as you have to be a certain way, or you have to act a certain way, you have to look a certain way. These are the things that we are learning. So when it comes to wanting to make that decision for ourselves as young adults, it's very, very hard to commit. It's very hard to sit down and say, I'm going to make this decision. I know what it takes, because we don't have that guidance. We don't have that direction. So that's partially why 50% of the black community is unmarried. You know, we really need to work on that as a community, stepping it up and representing ourselves as people who do want to marry, someone that can be in a marriage, maybe just look a little bit deeper into what it takes to successfully maintain a marriage, because it's a lot more than just being with someone you're attracted to. You have to be with someone you like. You have to be with someone you can grow with. You have to be with someone you can trust. And I'm not saying just build up this list of expectations that someone may never amount to, but you have to know what you want. You have to know what you accept. You have to know what you're capable of giving. And a lot of people don't know that simply because of the fact that we were not taught. We don't have a roadmap. There's a lack of representation. I'm Samaya. You've been watching African Diaspora News Channel. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you support us by becoming a YouTube channel member. Join us on Patreon, and we also have Cash App. All of the links will be down below in the pinned comment.
Okay. Do you have from the sister? Now, what we're going to do is before we hear from the brothers again, because what we want to do is we want to give them a chance in a group to let us know what you really, really think. What's really, really on your mind when it comes to the partner that you're going to choose or what you're going to be with. I have some questions for my guests when they arrive. Keep in mind, the number to dial into the broadcast is 515-605-9757. You press 1 on the phone, that'll give me an indication you got something to say. And I'm right here to try to answer your questions as best I can. But let's go back and deal with the historicity of this thing. And after we do that, then we'll come back and we'll hear what the brothers got to say about this stuff. Okay? All right. So let's deal with this here. We'll only be gone for a few minutes, and we'll be right back. So y'all hold on a minute.
Black history, they don't want you to know. The origin of the marriage license. Back in the 1600s, where most of our laws concerning marriage were inherited from England, the ugliest of these laws were called anti-miscegenation laws, or laws that prevented interracial marriages. These laws persisted for over 300 years, and they were almost in every state in the Union. Miscegenation laws were upheld numerous times, even after the 14th Amendment was passed. In the famous Supreme Court case of 1896, Plessy versus Ferguson, the concept of separate but equal became the law of the land. What this did was allow the states that still clung to anti-miscegenation laws to renew their fervor against interracial marriage. The argument was something like this. Everyone is free to marry. Just marry in your own race. Up until this point in American history, around the 1920s, there was no such thing as a marriage license. The states invented them as a way to dictate who could and who could not get married for the purpose of making sure blacks, whites, Asians, and Indians didn't mix. Simply put, marriage licenses were invented as a way to stop white people from marrying black people. Because they couldn't get a license, interracial couples who could have been or would have been considered married before the marriage license was available ceased to be married. They lost inheritance rights, medical rights, and all of the benefits of common law marriage. The issuers of marriage licenses were considered the gatekeepers or charged with keeping the white race pure. Laws against interracial marriage persisted long after segregation was deemed unconstitutional in 1957. It wasn't until 1967 that anti-miscegenation laws were wiped off the books in the southern states. Alabama didn't bother to take it off the books until 2000. In fact, until 1967, an interracial marriage could get you 10 years in prison. Why the anger? On both sides of the battle lines, black marriage caused friction between legal and religious authorities because married independent freedmen with families did not readily serve white supremacy in theory or practice. Instead, marriage conferred manhood on freedmen and slaves in ways that made many whites uncomfortable. At the heart of it all, predictably, is the urge to control the lives of others. White people might marry black people, therefore, the state must get involved. Just as the modern anti-immigration crowd today argues that we must destroy freedom in order to save it, the old racist proponents of government marriage likely argue that we must abolish freedom in marriage or the, quote, Negro agitators and their dusky-skinned allies will destroy freedom. Some have said that is conservative logic at its best. Black history, they don't want you to know.
Okay, there you have it. That's a little food for thought also. But let's hear what the brothers got to say about this thing, man. Let's get on down and then after that we're going to be dealing with when does the brother decide to get married? When is he gonna do that? At what point in time in his life does he decide to do that? Okay, but after that, we're gonna take a little quick commercial break and we'll be back. Keep in mind the phone lines are now officially open. And if you got a question or comment, press 1 on your phone. That'll give me an indication that you got something to say. But let's hear from the brother. Let's see what the brother's doing about this thing.
I didn't
Hold
think
on.
There was one woman that could fulfill my intellect, my intellect as well as my lawyers. that could fulfill my intellect, that could keep me entertained long enough for me to consider being with her for a year, let alone the rest of my life, right? Mm-hmm. Because I was so accustomed to different women. Mm-hmm. Multiple women every week was always the goal, and that was the lifestyle. So to think that I could find everything I need in one seemed impossible.
Did you always know you wanted to be married, since you guys are already happily married with children now? And do you guys want to get married? You think that person's out there for you. And so, who do we start with?
Man, I'll jump in.
Okay.
Right.
Excited.
I always knew I wanted to get married.
Why?
My father lived 5 minutes away from me. I never knew him. And so
how did you know he lived 5 minutes away?
Because my mom, we would pass by the house, and we're like, that's where your father stays.
Wow.
And so unity, fatherhood is something I used to raise my hand in school when they said, what do you want to be when you grow up? I'll be like, I want to be a father.
Oh, wow.
I remember the homie used to be like, you can do that right now, homie. You can just
Not like that.
Wow.
So
I knew I wanted to, one, be a father, even before I knew I wanted marriage. I was shooting for fatherhood before I was even shooting for marriage. But I knew that all went in line for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was something I desired. It was something I dreamt about. It was something I wanted. Now, my life didn't, high school wasn't like I was faithful in my relationships or in college. So I didn't understand what it took to do it, but I knew that was the end goal.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I always desired marriage, desired a family, and desired fatherhood.
And how's it feel?
I would say, like, my humanity is fulfilled, like my inheritance, like there's a legacy I get to leave.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I respect that.
That's dope.
That's good.
Yeah.
Stefan?
For me, in the back of my mind, like way, way, way in the back of my mind, I wanted marriage, but I didn't think it was possible.
Mm.
I didn't think there was one woman that could fulfill my intellect, my intellect as well as my lawyers. that could fulfill my intellect, that could keep me entertained long enough for me to consider being with her for a year, let alone the rest of my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I was so accustomed to different women.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple women every week was always the goal, and that was the lifestyle. So to think that I could find everything I need in one seemed impossible. But in the back of my mind, my current lifestyle, or my lifestyle at the time, was exhausting.
I was just about to say, isn't it just much simple. Oh, like,
it is.
It's definitely still hard, and I'm talking like I'm married. It seems as though it's like, wow, like I have something that I build, and every time I come back, it's
yeah.
where I left it. Yeah. We're still building.
Yeah.
And
to have one woman that you know has your back, that you know you can trust, that you can leave your phone out and not trip, that she can leave her phone out, that you can get tested and not have to worry about anything.
Mm-hmm.
You can.
We getting deep.
I mean,
here.
Like, you, it's just like a sense of peace that you don't have living that other lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so now, having lived on the opposite extreme from being a complete man whore to now being a faithful husband of 3.5 years, is everything I could have imagined and more. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not I'm missing out on anything else. That other stuff was preventing me from getting to where I'm at now, which is a state of peace I've never had.
Wow. Wow. All right. We're starting single, guys, now. This is inspirational, by the way.
Yeah, for real.
For myself, definitely want to have a family. My father, I think my mom cut my father off at like 7 years old, and we ended up just losing total, just like, any type of communication with him. Don't know where he is, if he's alive, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't miss a father because my mom was just such a strong woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, I'm like, I'm sure I would be different.
Yeah.
And I'm always, that's a FOMO in itself. Like, what would have happened if I had just knew who he was a little bit more? Or if I would, you know, he came to my basketball games, if he came to my graduation. So I want to be that person for my children. I want to be the best dad that I can be, role model. And I want to be that, like, generational thinking person where I'm thinking about my grandkids, I'm thinking about my great-grandkids, and I'm financially, mentally, physically putting those individuals in the best position possible to be successful. And it's up to them to obviously take that, I was going to say, take that crown. That's to just take that with them to move on.
Right. I've had a strong aversion to marriage just because of what I saw. You know, again, I don't want to put a lot of people, business in the street, but I just felt like if it happens, it happens. If I find that one woman, then I say this is, she's the one, and this is it. It's unfortunate. I won't say unfortunate, but just up to this point, I haven't found that. But I'm a renewed person. I understand myself better, and I think that I can understand why my relationships haven't been successful. For one, because I thought that they couldn't be because of maybe I thought that I'm cursed or it just wasn't for me. But, you know, doing the reevaluations and self-realizations and things like that, I know that eventually one day I don't want to be the old dude at the club.
Hey, girl, that is not the look. Come on, you ain't dressing like the young people no more, man.
You know, and I don't want to be that, but I want to make sure that with all of the decisions that I made in my life, you know, whether they be, you know, favorable or not, that if I do decide to commit to one woman, that there has to be a set of things, I would call it, that fall in line, because I know exactly who I am more now, and especially through the pain that I've dealt with and the frustrations. I've been on that side. I know what to look out for now.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what makes me tick. I know what makes me get ticked off. And I have yet to find that one woman where I say, this is it, but I don't have an aversion to finding that. It's just that I did, but now I don't have that aversion, but I am not looking to get married.
Mm-hmm.
But if it comes up and I say, I want to lock this down,
mm-hmm.
which I think would be, she's going to be an incredible woman
mm-hmm.
to be able to embrace who Tim and Kyle Durrett is, because of all of the things that have made me who I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to need that understanding and that compassion and that empathy and sympathy, and I want to give that too, because I know that the energy that I was giving off was out of negativity and pain and lack and frustration and anger, and all that stuff can brood and then become this seething cauldron of hatred of not just the world but yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have this self-loathing that causes your
you know, an involuntary demise of who you were supposed to be. And I've worked through that valley. I've been set on fire. I've been cleansed of that. So I'm relearning things. So I don't have, like, again, I don't have that disdain for marriage because of what I've seen, because that is not, I can change my legacy. I can change what it is.
Yeah.
But listening to you, brothers, you know, Aaron and Stefan, Aaron,
mm-hmm.
yes, make sure I didn't name it wrong. But it's just, especially as young as you all are, you know, I just like, well, you know, there's still a chance for me because I got some
yeah.
years under my belt, and I'm probably the eldest at the table, probably one of the eldest in this room. But, yeah, I mean, if it comes to that point, and I mean, what marriage would look like for me, I don't know if I'll do the traditional license and all that stuff because I don't think that, you know, as you can see, the divorce rate, you know, license don't hold nothing together. You know, it's what you have in your gut and your heart and your mind, and all three of those are matched. Like you said, you know, it's undeniable. Like, I can't deny this. You know, when you know it, you know it. It's like, this is it right here.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say who I was before that I had that mentality or that life mindset and skill set to determine or to even recognize if this is the one, because I was looking through a different lens that was pretty cloudy and murky. Now that I can see clearly, now the rain's gone, you know, and I'm able to see now. So if I find that one, like Fred Sanford said, you know, if you think about losing, don't do it, dummy. You know, hold on to that, because it's rare nowadays in this world where there's so much turmoil, especially in the relationship realm of things, where it's hard to find that one person. And so I applaud y'all, and I'm happy for y'all, man. It makes me think, because I didn't, in my opinion, I didn't do things the right way. And, you know, you spend a lot of your years being resentful of yourself and things, and you try to make up for that time. So if I find her, you know, I'm going to hold on to her like I hold on to money. Like, nope. So where you going? Yeah. You ain't stuck with me.
Figuring out right now if this one is the right one, and if not, we'll see. But definitely want that union so that I am not the old brother in the club. don't want to be there. Sometimes I feel old now.
Yeah.
Just at some spot, so, but yeah, definitely want that. Just when the time is.
All right, there you have it, with the brothers, the ups and downs, and what they had to say about this thing. It appears we have my guest is in the queue, I think is in, area code 312. Erico, 312, you are on the air. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from. 312, are you there, 312? Okay. But anyway, I see you got your hand raised and stuff, so I will come back. Because I have something else to explain, and what I want to explain to you is when we was talking about how to get married, and I use the term affidavit and creating your own contract and stuff. Why an affidavit opposed to just a letter of marriage? It is because an unrebutted, contested affidavit stands as truth. So when you decide to get married and you and your spouse create your own contract and get it witnessed and notarized and make it a public record, it's binding. So during that contract, if it's anybody that has any kind of rebuttal to that contract, they need to do it at the creation of the contract, because it's an affidavit of marriage. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that little bit in, and let me go back up here again and see if my guest is back. Area code 312, you on there? You with us, man? 312, have you fallen asleep? Are you awake? But anyway.
Not quite, brother, not quite.
Oh, okay, you with us. Come on in, man.
Yes, sir. Good evening to you, Tahaka.
Good evening to you.
And all the listening audience and Professor Williams. I'm here. This is Chicago. Joel from Chicago, chiming in from the Underground Bookstore.
All right. I've read the book listing to the Engine Broadcast. It's not like you got a lot of background noise there. You on the road, I do, actually.
Yes.
Okay.
For a little while, I'll try to block some of it. So I'll be home
okay,
in a minute.
Okay, well, all right, you're sounding good right now. My question to you is, are you married? Are you married?
No, sir,
man?
I am not. No, sir.
Okay. If you're not a married man, and
no,
if you plan on getting married one day?
Yes.
All right. Well, my question to you is, could you paint the picture for us of what you will be expecting from your woman? What will you expect?
I don't know. They say I was told not to put expectations on an individual because they won't do nothing but disappoint you.
Okay.
First thing. But now what I primarily would, I guess, some of the basics that I would probably like to expect.
Okay.
One is that communication, all the little ingredients that make a relationship, communication, trust, respect, what else? Trust, respect, communication, and all of that. But somebody who also has my, who can support me in what I'm endeavor that I'm in, particularly in the struggle right now. I don't want to have to be talking about my enemy and they saying love my enemy at the same time. You know, so I don't want it to be a conflict there. They need to be understand that I got to do what I got to do. And they can look at it as loving my enemy if they want, but I'm looking at it as loving me more that I would destroy them. So that's
okay.
Kind of what I expect.
All right. You know, when you're in a relationship, whether you are married or not, a lot of times you have to ask the question, well, wait a minute. Am I a priority in your life? Or if not, what is? You ever wondered about that or ran into that before?
No, I haven't. Really?
Okay. Well, I have during my lifetime, and I had to ask questions. Well, wait a minute. It appears that something else or everything else is a priority, and I come second. I've been in that position before, and I was wondering if there's other people out there that have actually been in that position. And so I wanted to get that out there and find
Let
out.
Let me ask this question. Go ahead.
Okay.
Find out. Since you said that, let me ask this one then. Since you have to ask that question, did that individual have children already?
Well, yeah.
Okay, so I can see where that would be asked, because sometimes they put their children before they put before you, and that's why some men may ask that question.
Well, I have to agree with you 100%. As far as I'm concerned, a woman with children, her children is always her number one priority. But what is it when you are dealing with a woman that doesn't have children and there's a priority that supersedes you? And let me give you a case in point. Okay, I was married. Didn't stay married long, but I told my wife, I said, look, I'm going to run this by you, and you let me know what you think. I said, out here where we at, we have real estate in abundance. I say, you going to work on your job, and I'm going to work on my job. Why don't we put our pennies together and buy up some of this in real estate, and that way we don't have to work for nobody else no more in life. She thought it was a wonderful idea. And I said, well, the first thing we're going to need to do before we even deal with this is we're going to have to learn everything we could possibly learn about real estate. She said, I agree with you 100%. So we got together about $950, and we bought a real estate course, the best on the market, the best that money could buy. And I said, I tell you what, you take half, and I take half. You just study that part right there, and I'm going to study this part right there. She told me, well, I don't want to study this real estate because I'm trying to move up on my job. I say, what? I'm looking out for my career. Your career? Now, keep in mind, her job sent her out of Texas to New York. New York to Chicago, Chicago to Los Angeles, and all over America training people how to make money for somebody else. And she getting a paycheck every week. And I said, well, wait a minute. I said, we done took $950 to invest in freedom where you can go to New York, Chicago, Detroit, Memphis, Texas, Tennessee, Los Angeles, Miami, Florida Keys, London, England, Britain, Spain, anywhere you want to go on the planet. And you're telling me that, well, I this is a priority. I say, what? My job is a priority. I knew I was in trouble. I got an entire Hume Publishing real estate course and an added bonus that go along with the course to show you how to take the real estate and use it on the stock market. So we're talking about $75,000 to $100,000 a month income. And she telling me about a job and moving up on a job. I knew I was in trouble because this is some serious business, man. And I mean, she wasn't about to budge on it. She said, I don't have an interest in real estate because I'm looking, well, they're supposed to give me a promotion. Oh, but anyway, Brother Yoel, I'm going to take a little quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get down to this thing, because I got some more questions, man. This is incredible. So I'm going to mute you back, and we're going to take a little quick break, because I've been at it for a minute, all right? Okay, we back, ladies and gentlemen, and let's deal with, when does a brother decide to get married? And we're going to try to give Brother UL a chance to get to the house and get off the road and stuff like that, because I don't like to talk to nobody when they're driving, man. I don't want nobody to have no accident. But anyway, y'all hold on a minute. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Ask a Black Man, where we get real answers from real men. This is the marriage episode where married and divorced men give their take on men's desire for wedded bliss and why so many fail to achieve it. Let's meet the men.
See, a lot of people think marriage is like feeling lovey-dovey and happy all the time.
A lot of people get into it not knowing what it's for.
I'm great as a human being, but going into this marriage, I suck. You're head of the household, you're the last word.
I'm big on, like, duty, sort of relegating duties.
Marriage, I think, is the best thing in the world.
So how do we feel about the divorce rate? I don't feel it's high enough then.
Good God.
It's not high enough. If people are in these terrible, raggedy relationships,
they need to get out.
Because a lot of people get into it not knowing what it's for. If you get into a
car,
this
is what I'm saying.
A relationship is a technology, and if you get into a car thinking it's for a radio and that's all you ever use your car for, you're using the car wrong. You see what I'm saying? You're not using the technology correctly. So you put all this investment into this thing, and you're not getting the return. You should just get a radio. You see what I'm saying?
We're talking about why the divorce rate is the way it is, and you have to go to the individuals who are getting married nowadays. You have to look at the kind of people that society is producing. We're not producing the same kind of people that came from that stock. I know I'm nothing like my grandfather, my great-grandfather. I couldn't walk a day in those shoes.
That's
like
real.
The stuff they used to have to do back in those days, not built like that. The women I see, like my grandmother, my mother, my great-grandmother, women aren't built like that right now. Like they're not, you, if you meet a woman who tells you that she wants to cook for you, wants to hold down the house, or wants to come out and y'all be equal partners, breadwinner, if you can find that woman, then yeah, it might pop off tomorrow. Like we might be down in Vegas in an hour. If I find that, but right now, a woman feels like most women you meet, I meet, feel like they're in competition. It's more of, I'm going to get it first. I don't need you. Whereas I'd rather be like, hey, listen.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
It's the perception of marriage.
I kind of disagree with that. Only I agree and I disagree. I disagree with it if we don't include what we need to do to get to a place, because obviously there's something going on in our community, and a lot of it comes from the relationships that we had with women, with the women in our particular group collectively. So if that is the case, we need to start understanding that, well, wait a minute, us as compared to other groups of people, and then you look at all the other things, if you're looking at it holistically, then if you're looking at it as an individual, and that's how you see it, I don't have a problem with it, but at the same rate, that can give us problems, and even more problems than we're having right now as a group of people.
Yeah, I think the perception of marriage is actually just incorrect. There's so many people who see marriage as like something to do. Like, I have a Facebook now, or I have a Twitter, now I have a marriage, now I have a ring. You look at all these people like, put a ring on. You know, I'm married now, I'm good. And that's like their final destination, but in reality, it's the beginning of the destination. So you get into the marriage, and you're like, okay, this is day one, what are we going to do? Make it work for day one. Day two, now what we're going to do? So if marriage itself is something you just shouldn't even touch, shouldn't even fool with, unless you know that you're going to die for this person, and you feel that they feel the same for you. Most black men are not marriage minded.
No, most black men.
It's hard to say yes or no, though, right? I mean, it's
most black
men. If you're saying manhood at 18 versus 30, like, you know, 18 is like, nah, I'm just trying to get my numbers out of the single digits. Like, you know what I'm saying? I went to school in Atlanta.
Like Twitter followers.
You just want to pick that 11th life. Closer to 30 is like, all right, I've done all that stuff that was on my bucket list, and now it's like,
if you've even managed to travel, well, maybe I want to buy a house before I get married.
Right.
Maybe I want to, you know, experience some things before I settle down get a wife, as opposed to some dudes I know who I want someone to experience this with.
Right. I want to travel with someone specifically. Like, I want to be able to build something with someone else as opposed to me doing it myself and then finding somebody to bring on board or finding somebody equal in my...
It's a blanket statement. It's a blanket question to say, are black men really minded towards marriage? Do they want to do it? I think if we're watching television or listening to music, we might say no. But every individual has their own perspective. Some people do want that person in their life to share all of their things with. I know me personally, I enjoy things, and I enjoy sharing those things with one person. I know that if I'm trying to share with a lot of people, some are going to take advantage of it, some are not going to appreciate it. I'm going to be devalued. I'm not going to have time for each person. So I know I'm marriage-minded. That's just me, but I can't speak for, you
well,
know.
It depends
the
where you're at,
in
your life.
Right.
I agree with Jason. It depends where you're at as you're starting out, as you go through different things. There's an evolution of us as a person. And depending which stage you are, you'll be open to certain things. Of course, when you're 19, 20, 25 years old, you want to travel, you want to experience different women or whatever the case may be. But as you evolve as a person, then the marriage concept might come into play.
Like, at the end of the day, if you're head of the household, you're the last word. So wherever you go forward, this is on you. You can't look back and say, well, you told me. Nobody wants to hear that when you're, like, the leader out front. You can be the boss or you can be the leader. Two different types.
That's two different.
You can be the boss or you can be the leader. You can be the boss and sit back and tell everybody else what to do, or you can be the leader, be out front and show them which way to go.
Exactly.
We're going to go this way.
So then, like, to flip that some, because, I mean, the way it's kind of thrown out there is the assumption that, like, the guy is the head of the house. But I mean, are there any objections to the woman doing that?
No, it's not.
And I only ask that from the perspective of, I'm big on like duty, sort of relegating duties. So if, you know, the woman's better at finances, let her, you know, be largely in front of that.
It's
or,
a give and take.
You switch.
You switch.
You know.
So just to consider that. She'll take the lead where area she's strong at and you fall back.
And especially these days, like women are doing so much more than us. Like, you know, at this point, we're trying to catch up with them, especially if you're like with a black woman.
You gotta be confident. As a man, first things first, you shouldn't even get married if you don't know yourself well enough to do that kind of stuff. That's number one. Number two, if you're insecure around your own wife to the point where she knows a little bit more than you, or she can do some things you can't do, and that makes you feel some kind of way, you haven't finished maturing as a man.
Right.
You don't know yourself. You shouldn't be married at all. It's not going to... Forget
have
marriage.
A girlfriend.
It's not going to work out for you in any aspect of your life, because women are everywhere. There's no getting away from them and all the good they're doing in society. So if you are insecure behind what a woman does and you're comparing that back to you, that's a problem, especially if it's your wife, because y'all on the same team.
I look at head of household like... if you're taking a car trip with somebody, one person has to drive. That doesn't even necessarily mean they decided where you're going.
Right.
I feel like there's a head and a heart, and both are necessary, or else you're dead and dumb. You know what I'm saying? So I say one person needs to have the heart who really decides what's going to happen, and the head figures out how to make it happen.
The
delegate. So like, let me drive. Don't grab the wheel. Get the radio right, hook me up with a drink and a sandwich, you know what I'm saying? Which is important, right? Like, neither one are more important than the other, I feel like. But somebody has to drive, and if both people are trying to grab the wheel, that's a crash waiting to happen.
Leader, referee sometimes, actor. There's a plethora of things, about 10 things. You know, we talk about all those things and a few other ones.
So let me ask, sort of expand on that. Or then, how do you feel that your role differed as a man? You know, for you know, you guys that have been married or whatnot. What was the biggest difference in jumping from the boyfriend to the husband?
The husband falls when you're the husband, and you say you're head of household. The good things that happen in your marriage, you take responsibility for that. And the bad things, you take responsibility for that. And that's where I see a husband. So you can't blame when things go horribly wrong on other people. You're the husband. So things that start and are enter the house, it's on you. Things that exit the house, it's on you. And that's when we say we're in charge. Being in charge is not telling people what to do. It's actually taking responsibility for the good and the bad in the relationship. And that's what a husband
is. The game changer in life is as soon as you care for someone more than you care for yourself.
There you go.
And then the transition, I mean, seamlessly, but it's not work. It's something you want to do. So as a husband, you know, like I say, you're taking responsibility. I'm taking responsibility for financial. I take the responsibility for the emotional support. You know, you're just accepting the responsibility.
All right, seems like we got a little technical difficulties there. I see another caller with his hand raised at area code 612. I'm opening up the phone line. 612, you're on the air. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment?
Yes, sir. My name is Michael. I'm calling from PA. Just want to thank you, first of all, for taking my call. And my comment was that we see that marriage obviously has a great function for society. And this is why all these cultures around the world, regardless of what religion or what part of the world you go to, saw the value of marriage. And the value of marriage is creating stable families for children to grow up in. And now you see today in America where marriage is completely broken down, women through divorce, or people living outside of wedlock, and all these kids being born out of wedlock. You see the effect it's having on society and how society is breaking apart all around us. And we see statistics that show that when children are born or raised in a single family parent household, especially if a single mother, they are more likely to drop out of school, end up in jail, end up in poverty, and a whole host of other issues, especially personally and emotionally. And so we see that the benefit of it was there. But unfortunately, today people don't see the wisdom of what people knew in the past. And that's why I see society in America like it is now.
Okay. Where you calling from, brother?
PA.
PA. Is that Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So, are you married?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And how long have you been married?
Since 2011.
Sound like we got a little problem here. Sound like we're breaking up for some reason or another. I don't know why. I can't understand this business to save my life. Why? Why?
No, I said 2011. Is it clear now?
But you still sound like you're kind of breaking up.
Okay, what about
anyway,
now? Is it better now?
Yeah.
Okay.
So in your opinion, do you consider your marriage a happy marriage? Do you feel fulfilled?
Yeah, I do, but even if I wasn't, that's not the reason for the marriage. It's not for me to be happy or fulfilled.
Okay. And you and your wife on the same page?
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
the thing I want to follow up with that point is that that's what people today think when they think of marriage, about whether or not you're happy, whether or not you're fulfilled. And that's why so many women try to get divorces, because they treat the marriage like that. The purpose of the marriage is to have a functioning family. So, for example, if you have children, it's all about the children and giving them a stable home.
Hold on a second, brother. Hold on a second. What I'm going to do is I'm going to mute your mic, and I'm going to go out and dial back into the broadcast. I'm gonna try that. Mute your mic. Okay, brother, can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you now.
Okay, all right. Go ahead and continue saying what you were saying before I went out.
Yeah, no, I was just saying the reason, for example, you got so much divorce now in America, especially from the women's perspective, is that people view their marriage relationship on the basis of whether they're happy or fulfilled, which if you go back in the day, especially prior to like the 1960s, people understood that the purpose of the marriage was for the family and for the children. And so even when people weren't happy, they stuck together out of duty for the benefit of the family. And that's why you had so much more stable communities in the past than you got today. Because today everybody got this selfish mindset of what makes me happy versus what's in the benefit for others more than just myself. And so that's why American society is falling apart right now. I mean, if you look around every city, what do you see? You see a bunch of kids that were raised in single mother homes that are acting a fool in these streets and doing all kind of craziness. I mean, look what's going on.
Well, I have to agree with you 100%. My position is it took me a long time to learn, and my best teachers were women, and I had to come to the conclusion that I had to eventually just deal with the man in the mirror, and that's what I end up doing. I learned how to recognize things because I would always lay my cards on the table. I had a sister. I asked her one time, I said, look, I said, this is what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to take you to dinner, and we're going to go out of town to dinner because I have a friend of mine that owns a brand new restaurant, and I told him I was coming, and I want you to go with me because I got some things I want to say to you, and I want to lay this out because we seem to be getting along and pretty good, and I like you, you like me, and it's all good, so we're going to go do that. So we went down to St. Augustine to a Russian designed restaurant, and a friend of mine, he was a chef back here in the day, and me and him used to work together back in the kitchen, and I came in there, and he gave us the VIP treatment, and he had his dock that stretched out going out into the ocean, so me and her, we took a stroll out in the ocean, and I said, this is what I want to talk to you about. I said, my dreams and goals and plans are colossal in scope. I say, I'm very ambitious. I say, what I want is a bare minimum of, to earn a bare minimum of $50,000 a month. And I say, I got plans in order to do just that. And I wanted to get you out here to talk to you and let you know where I'm at, so I can determine if we're on the same page now. He said, okay, how you going to plan on doing that? I said, well, first thing, I said, I've learned about real estate. I said, but I'm really, really very much interested in dealing with investing in the stock market. And I learned how to do that very safely at a bare minimum of loss. And I've come up with a plan that it'll generate probably about $15,000 to $20,000 starting off per month. But what I want to know from you is where you at? What's your goals and visions and stuff? She told me that she envisioned having a hot dog stand and putting it on a corner downtown and selling hot dogs. I said, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Because I said, well, how much income do you think that was? Well, I don't need all that because I'm retired. I'm a professional. I have a career, and I do all right, but I really would like to have the hot dog standing. I said, well, what about travel? Oh, I love to travel. I said, where you want to travel? I want to go to England. I said, wait a minute. Would you like to see Africa? No, they got mosquitoes. I said, okay. And England ain't. But anyway, I come to the conclusion that I'm maybe resonating at a too high vibrational frequency in dealing with this particular sister here and her dreams. And if I never could shake her away from the hot dog stand downtown, standing on the corner selling hot dogs. And she thought the stock market was a fantastic idea, but she was scared of that. I said, okay. But what's your take on that, man?
So, for example, like, let's say you approach a woman. What, like, do you want? Do you want, like, a wife and kids? Or, like, what are you actually looking for exactly?
Well, she asked me to marry her.
No, but, I'm not talking about what she wants. I'm talking about what you want. Like, what are you looking for in a woman?
What I'm looking for in a woman? Well, I'm looking for in a woman, I want her to resonate at the same high vibrational frequency of consciousness and awareness. That's number one. And then I'm looking at the mathematical situation, too. I know about the compatibility and all this stuff. And I want to know what our take is on our ancient story, culture, and all of this stuff. But basically,
basic
format.
Do you want like a submissive woman that'll let you be the leader? Or are you trying to be like equal partners with your woman, or like how do you want the relationship to be structured?
Well, the thing is, I'm already the boss. I'm already got all of that. I would like her be on the same level of playing field. But what I'm more interested in is what's inside her brain. I go beyond looks and all this stuff. I'm looking inside your mind. That's what I want to know. And that's only based on my own personal experience. When it comes to getting married or saying I do, that's my take on how I see it.
Okay. Yeah,
but now back to...
Like for me, I'm looking more for a woman that plays a role that will be submissive, that take care of the house, take care of the children. You know what I'm saying? I don't need a woman out here making money. I don't need that. I can make my own money. I'm able to do my own thing. I just want that.
Okay.
But I noticed that, and it's because I'm an immigrant, so maybe I have an outsider's viewpoint. I know here in America, you guys view women differently. Like you want, you treat you like women to be have more power in the relationship, which is sort of. It's more of a, that's something you see in the West. You don't see that much in the rest of the world. And so I'm more fascinated by that dynamic.
Let me ask you something. What country are you from?
Ethiopia.
Ethiopia. Okay.
Yes, sir.
I guess you pretty much right about what you just said. Because here, I'm original and indigenous to this land. I've always been here. They're not come from Africa. And we're having a hard time getting a lot of people to understand that because in their minds they're thinking, well, you had to come from somewhere. No, we didn't. We've always been here. But anyway,
Oh, you mean you're Native American?
No. We was here before they got here. We were the ones that built it. No, I'm not a native. I'm original, absolutely indigenous. We've always been here. This is our land. We didn't come from someplace.
I'm talking about the people that
now we do have Native Americans. They came here from the mountains of Palestine. It was the Polynesians brought them here on the boat. We can prove that, put that out there. And the only reason I'm saying the thing that I'm saying is because this is what I can prove. It's not enough for me to put facts on the table. I have to attach the truth to the facts. But hold on one second, and we can get down in this. Hold on. Let me bring my guest back in. I'm going to mute your mic, and I'll bring my guest back in, and then I'm going to bring you in. Hold on a minute.
Okay.
Brother Yoel, are you still with us, man?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Are you at the house? Good, man. I'm glad you were in that car. All right, let me open up the brother's line back up here, because we're having a very interesting conversation. He's from, he says he's originally from Ethiopia, and I'm pretty sure he's inside the United States. They have a very happy marriage. And brother, your line is back open now at area code 612. Do you, in your marriage, have you introduced your wife to your Ethiopian culture and customs, and if so, how does she feel about that?
No, she's from the same country.
Oh, she's from Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So y'all on the same page. So, what you think about America? You like it over here?
I mean, the country is great. There's a lot of opportunities, a lot of freedom. I appreciate that, and that's, you know, help my family. But the culture here is so weird, like, because the way the culture was in America, let's say in the 90s and early 2000s, it was cool, right? It was not that different from other parts of the world, but now it's going completely to the left. It's going crazy. Like, the way they talk with this whole LGBT thing and gender fluidity and men can become women and women can become men, and now you got women out here trying to act like they're men. And I see in people's relationships, too, where, like, the women are in control, the women take the leadership role, and, like, the men let the women walk all over them, and it's weird. It's a weird culture, because, like, in the rest of the world, it's not like that. Like, the rest of the world, in Africa, for example, most of Africa, homosexuality is illegal. It's a crime. You go to jail for it. But here, it's like,
and
homosexuality
and they'll kill you, too, won't they?
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely. But here, it's like, bro, y'all celebrate homosexuality. You got, like, a whole month where everywhere you go, all you see are these rainbow flags. You got all these parades. I've never seen anything like this. That's the part that throws me off. It's like, man. I mean, it's like the homosexuals took over. Like, they got the most power in America right now, where you can't say nothing about them. You know, for me, I don't even call them LGBT. I call them the Rainbow Mafia, because that's the way they seem to operate in America, where it's like they're shaking down corporations. They're, like, getting money from everybody. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I have to agree with you 100%. And this has had a very devastating effect. Long before it happened, I dealt with some extensive research on cultures and what happened to these cultures as a result of allowing homosexuality to flourish in these cultures. I think one of them was a certain part of Greece that decided that we're going to just do the whole thing any kind of way we want to do it. We just gonna do this but that culture, the entire culture collapsed. And I never forget that. I forgot what book it was in, but I had studied that a long, long, long time ago. But hold on 1 second, brother. Brother Yoel, I see your call dropping. You back in, man.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you want to weigh in on this thing what the brother just said?
Well, what could I say? But he just told the truth. That's all I can say.
Okay.
But you're right, and it has. But, you know, I will add to what he said, and that is that what you're talking about, brother, was a plan to do that way back, I think maybe almost 40 years ago. I remember a book written by Nathan and Julia Hare called The Coming Extinction of the Black Family. And in that book,
okay, brother UL called a drop. Come on back, brother.
Okay.
Call drop. His call has been dropping, but go ahead. I'm listening.
Is he still on the line?
Yeah. Okay, he just came back on. Hold on, man.
Okay.
Yeah. But
okay, brother UL,
what
you back?
Happened to me. But
your call keep dropping.
They talked about how they had a plan, and I forget the name of the plan, to come with to push homosexuality in the black neighborhood to break down the fabric of the black family. Well, now it's 40 years later. Now you can see it. It's clear as night and day. Okay? So that was this was planned to be that way, and there's a reason behind it. You know, that's a whole nother show. But you can't really have a what you call a stable or a I'm trying to search for the word, but you can't have the society with that kind of behavior, immoral behavior going on, and it becomes acceptable, okay? Because once once that starts happening, then right after that, when they start pushing the homosexuality through the Barack Obama administration, the pedophilia start raising their head up a little bit, and bestiality begin to have a conversation too. So you're gonna let all the demons out of the closet when you open the door to one. They all want out. Okay, so it's leading to destroying and the decadence and destruction of this society as we know it. So that's what I have to say about that issue right there. You know, so but it's interesting that, you know, the brother has he said culture. We have none, bro. We ain't got. It's like it's our thing to do what you want to do kind of thing here. So we have no culture like that. Okay, not as it when you get into the actual definition of what you call a culture. You know, we didn't come away after slavery. We didn't come away with putting one together because the one we had been destroyed and taken away from us anyway. So we never put one back together. What we're doing right now is we're just doing some stuff, okay? For those who have somewhat civil in their attitudes, they're trying their best to be the best that they can be, you know. But when it comes to the subject we're talking about tonight, marriage, of course, the Muslims got a saying. They say marriage is one half of a Muslim's faith. In other words, whatever he does inside, he or she does inside Islam, he can only get 50% for that. The other 50% has to find another man, or she has to find another man, or he has to find another wife in order to complete the whole 100%. You know, and then the other thing about it is when you talk about family. We mentioned this before, Tahaka, and it goes back to an old African proverb that goes, the ruins of a nation begins in the home of its family. And so if you got decadent and unstable families or what you call dysfunctional families, then you're going to have a dysfunctional nation, and that's what we have here today. Okay? So That's what I have to say about that.
All right, Brother Yoel. Brother, hold on a minute. Let me add a little bit more to what he was saying. I'm going to tell you a little story, and I view this as the magnitude, the depth of the magnitude of this kind of thing, because this happens, it's in the air. It's in your television programming. It's inside your hospitals. And this is how this stuff is being done. It's in the food and the water you eat and drink and stuff. And so this is all a part of it. Now, one day I was working on a job, and the supervisor, he wanted to get some men together to do a certain job. And there was this little guy over there that considered himself a woman. And he was over to the right, and the guy that was picking the men, he said, well, I need one more man. I said, well, there go a man standing right there. I said, he's not a woman, he's a man standing right there. And this boy, he got mad with me. And you don't know what you said it, and I'm standing there. I got a lockback 90s knife in my pocket, and I'm like, I sure hope you ain't finna come over here, because we finna have some bologna for everybody to eat by the time I get to stabbing and slicing you. And he realized that, and he backed up. And the boy that was looking for the man, he turned to the boy and said, well, would you like to? No, I'm not cut out for doing that sort of thing. You have to go and find someone else. I'm just not cut out for that sort of thing. Man, you talking about somebody was mad? I was mad. But I said, there ain't nothing for me to do but calm down, because this here kind of situation is going on, and I mean, this has been going on for a long time, because we live right next door to this man. It was an old man that lived in the house next door, and he was the grandfather, and the wife and father had passed, but the grandfather, he had the house, and then he had one of the family members' uncle that lived up there. This guy was a giant man, and he was a big administrator over to the college, but you couldn't tell him he wasn't a woman. And every day he come home, him and the old man, they get into it and they go round and round. But one day, that joker came home, he started arguing, and all of a sudden, we heard gunshots going off. Pop had then shot him to death up there. And they had to take him up out of there and take him to the morgue, because he shot him straight through the heart with a 22 and killed him instantly. Now, this thing right here is real messed up in our society, so you had to ask yourself a question. Why is the so-called black man in this country that's been here all these years, why is he constantly under attack? And he's been under attack for years and years and years. We come to the conclusion, based on the new information that's coming out here now, the reason why is because this is his land. He owns this land. He was here before anybody ever came here. He didn't come from nowhere. He's always been here, and this is his land. And this is what the problem is, because the information is coming out now. It is being made a public record to where he is, where he's always been, and not only in the United States of America, South America, Brazil, Argentina, Cuba, Jamaica, the islands. And what they was doing was they hatched this counterfeit information telling you that all of y'all came to this country from Africa. That is a lie. We always been here, and this is our land. And this is part of why they shot Martin Luther King, because he told you that the black man is languishing from one end of America to the other. He is exiled on his own land. That's exactly what he told you. Did the same thing to Malcolm.
It's not his land anymore. That's obviously not the case. That's not how the world works. You know what I'm saying?
A big part?
So, for example,
What did you say now? I didn't hear you.
I said it's not their land anymore, because that's not how the world works. The world doesn't work in the concept of you got this land. Let's say you put a flag. Let's say you go 10,000 years ago, right? Let's say 10,000 years ago, a group of people show up on a piece of land. It doesn't mean from that point on, just because they were there, doesn't mean that's their land anymore. The way the world is,
I don't understand. I can't hardly hear you. Speak up. Say that again. Now.
Okay. So the idea that like land belongs to somebody, there's no concept that land belongs to anybody. For example, let's say someone came here 10,000 years ago, right? They were the first people that arrived on this land, right? Just because you happen to get there first, it doesn't make it yours. If you know, if you study
Hold on a minute, brother. Yeah. Hold on. What I'm saying to you is that we didn't come from anywhere.
It doesn't matter where you came from. It doesn't matter if you were here first or any of that. The way human history has always been is the survival of the fittest. It's always been a competition to take land. Everywhere. Where I'm from in Africa. In
well,
my country,
I have to agree with you 100%. And And the reason why I'm agreeing with you, let me say this right here. All right, now, right over there in Peru, you got the largest pyramidal structure on the planet. You can take the Great Pyramid of Giza and put two or three of them in this thing. This thing is bigger than 15 football fields. And what they done?
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
They went down.
Does that matter today?
But wait a minute, hold on, brother, hold on. Now you told me you come from Ethiopia to America, and now
You're
trying to tell me who I am and where I came from. So
no,
let me finish saying
where you came from. What I'm saying is that what relevance does it have?
Hold on, bro. Now my position is, this is my land. It's always been my land. I'm not looking for the government to give me any reparations because I didn't come from anywhere. But what I would like for the government of the United States, the corporations, which is them governments, the United States corporations, conglomerate corporations, masquerading as government, what I would like to them to do is go back before they manifest destiny, pay me back rent for being here, and give me back taxes for being here. That's what
know,
I
that's
want, me personally.
You know, that's not going to happen.
That
ain't never happened.
Hold on a minute, because, we got this thing where all civilizations, people believe that all civilizations exist as a result of conquest. That's simply not true. If you let me finish saying what I'm going to tell you, let me mute your mic so I can finish saying what I'm saying, then I'll let you back in. Hold on. Okay. Brother Yoel, what I'm saying is this is what they done. When they went over there, and keep in mind, they in Peru. They're in over there in Brazil. I'm sorry, in Brazil, and they dug down in this mine, in this mound, and they dug down for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of feet, and they started finding artifacts, and they're finding pottery, they're finding plants, they're finding skeletal remains, they're finding all this. But what they did not find is any war weapons. So what they did was they invited two scientists over to continue the search, because these scientists, in their mind, they believe that all civilizations began as a result of conquest and robbery and murder and violence. But that was not the case over here, and after they done everything that they could possibly do, they found absolutely no war weapons. So in other words, what we had here, and we're talking about the same identical people that look just exactly like me, and we down thousands of feet down in the earth digging this stuff up. So we have a people who were here dating all the way back hundreds of thousands of years of what we could find. And then keep in mind, this is minus having any access to Lemuria or Atlantis. But we're right here in this hemisphere. But the thing is, they want to say that life began in Africa. And that's simply not true. Life began in the Americas. And we've always been here, and living in peace and tranquility until other people and stuff that came in here. Just like the guy was saying on the other plug that I ran on last week's show, he told you where the Native Indians came from. They came from Palestine when the people went up there and got them up out the mountains and brought them here. And the Europeans asked them, did y'all build those mounds there? They said no. And it's in their own tradition. We didn't build a mound. That was there when we got here. Now, when it comes to ownership of the land, this is the way I see it. If I'm here first, this is my own. What I need to know from you is, when did I invite you here? can you provide me with a contract clearly showing that I agreed to let you come here and in the first place, and if that don't exist, how you going to come here and claim anything in my house? How can you come to my house on invitation, look over there in the corner and see a lamp in the corner and tell me that, well, I'm going to have to confiscate that lamp because I discovered it? Amazing. But anyway, let me open up the brother's line again. But before I do, Brother Yoel, you got a, what's your take on this, man, before I open up the brother's line?
Well, first of all, I understand what the brother's saying. It's something to say, but I take the position that that if we want to talk about ownership now, or we want to talk about, even if we don't talk about ownership, when, like you said, if I'm sitting on the property, you don't get to come here and take me off the property and take over it because you came in with your conquest, with your gun, your violence, and you did what you did to take this. Now, if we gonna use that rule, then we got to go back to saying, well, why are we paying the Jews? Why are the Germans paying the Jews? Why are they paying their so-called Native Americans, you know, money? You know, every year they pay them money. Okay, so for what are they paying them that for then? If they through conquest they took it, and this connected the so-called Native Americans from the ownership because they conquered them, but yet they still paying them. Okay, British, the Haitians are paying the British for what? They paid them reparations for what then? They through war made them go back home and leave us alone by fighting back, and they won, and they sent Napoleon back to France. So why would we want to pay France any money when they came in and intruded on us in our land here in Haiti, and they couldn't do it? So now the talks start. And now you want me to pay you some money for what we did to you fairly. So why is that? And if we ain't going to talk about that, then if we ain't going to talk about those issues, then there's no need to bring them up if they ain't going to go back on that and reverse all of that kind of stuff and give them people their money back. Because if we were here first, then somebody needs to pay me for damage to person and property. And I feel they should pay for damage and property.
Well, I feel
if you
the
had
same
a,
way.
If you had your house, like you said there, and somebody walked in and claimed your lamp, well, maybe, hold up now. You took my lamp, you know, so you need to pay me for my lamp. That's damage. And in this world, spiritually, you're good unless you intrude or invade or do damage to somebody else's person or property. Okay, so they did damage to person and property. I don't care if it was through conquest or not, because you had more guns and all this kind of stuff, and you came in and you took something. That don't make it right. If that's the case, you need to go let them guys out of jail when they went and took what they took. Then the white man came in and locked them up and put them in jail for taking what they took. They did the same thing they did.
Well,
okay,
I have to agree with you on that, Brother UL. The thing is, the way I look at the situation is, if I'm going to state my position, the next thing I need to do is have proof beyond any shadow of a doubt. I need to have all the facts, and every fact that I have, I need to be able to attach the truth to it. See, the way I look at this thing, I'm not trying to be realistic or look at it from a certain point of view. I just know what I know for a fact, and this is what I can prove. However, inside the United States, we have what's called legal and illegal. And then we also have what's called the law. Now, the law states that you can do anything you want to do, provided you do not cause any harm or bodily harm to another person. It also states that you can do anything you want to do, provided you do not harm or destroy anybody's property. Now, the law has already been violated in involving us. I'm not out here trying to get on a soapbox and tell everybody they need to think like I do. I just do what I do. I had a guy the other day, man. I was coming in the yard from the store, and I heard a dog barking down the street, but like he was in some kind of distress. So I said, well, wait a minute. Before I go in the house, let me go down here and see what's going on. So I walked down, and I know the neighbor down there got a dog back there, so I walked up in the neighbor's driveway. The guy next door, he said, can I help you? Can I help you? I said, no. I said, I heard a dog down here barking and stuff. Well, no, everything all right down here. We got this here down here. I said, well, okay, bro. And I turn around, and I go back home. Now, when I go back home, I go in the house, and the next thing I know, here comes the same guy walking down the sidewalk down there to my house. And he looked like he very, very angry. So I go in the room. I said, well, what the heck is this? And I get a 9mm, 13 rounds of brass tip shell, go straight to a P-89, go straight through a tractor trailer motor, and put it up under my shirt and walk that side and sit in the front yard. He came up to the fence and said, hey, man, I need to talk to you a minute. I said, okay. So I walked over there. He said, man, you know you scared my whole family? I said, what? He said, you scared my whole family. Man, that house down there, I own that house down there. I said, okay. And then he goes walking off, but when he get probably about 15 to 20 feet, he looks off over his shoulder and start calling me all kind of punks and all this right here. And I'm looking at this idiot because all dogs don't bark. But anyway, let me bring this brother thing in because we got a whole lot. He said it right. We got a whole lot of crap going on this side of the United States. Let me bring him back in. Area code 612. Come on back in, man.
Yes, sir.
You with me, right?
So what I was saying, what I was saying before is you got to look at land like it's like here's an example of it like a woman, right? If you dated a girl 10 years ago, you were the first girl she dated, the first guy she was with, right? And now 5 years later, somebody else is with her. And you're saying, no, well, I have her first, but she's with somebody else. That's similar to how you're claiming about the land. Now, you may claim at one point in, well, whatever, 100 years ago, a couple hundred years ago, your people may have had the land. The reality is somebody else came and took it, and your people weren't strong enough to fight them off. And so they took it, and now it's theirs, and they built what we call America today on top of it. And it turned into a successful country. You can't deny it. It's the most economically and militarily most powerful country in the world right now. Number one economy, number one military. No country on this planet can even lie to it right now. That's just the reality. I'm not saying it's fair.
That's not true.
It's right. We're talking about what's
that's
reality.
True.
How is that not true? I just stated facts.
Mm-hmm. No, that's because the truth didn't come with that. And that's a bad analogy. You can't use a woman you dated years ago to let go. It's the same as a piece of land, a property, or a house that you in, and somebody come in and parachute storm, kick the door down, come in and kill, maim, and everybody like a woman.
That's not a very good analogy, though, bro. Well, no, I mean, I understand you're talking about from the violence standpoint, I get. What I'm talking about is if you look at the world, like, for example, this concept of things being fair or what's right or what's just, this is a recent concept that people have been talking about within the last 50, 60 years. Prior to that, the standard procedure around the world was conquest, meaning if you either your people were strong enough to defend your land or they were strong enough to take another land. Right, let's look at the people that look at some of the native people that we look at the Aztecs. The Aztecs built an empire in Mexico, and they conquered all the weaker tribes around them. And when they subjugated the tribes that were around them, they forced them to have to do human sacrifice, and they would take captives and sacrifice them to their god, Quetzalcoatl, in their main city there in Mexico, or in their, at their pyramid temples. So
that was happening not just there. Same thing was happening in Africa. In my home country, we have 5 different ethnic groups in my country. We have the Amhara, the Tigray, the Oromo, and all these different groups over time. Different groups were in power, and the other group would come in and take over, and they would be in power, and they would set up their dynasty. And that was happening in every part of the world. That was happening all the time. Now, not every specific ethnic group was doing it, because some were just not strong enough, but amongst every continent, it was happening everywhere. You had your dominant powers, you had your weaker ones. The dominant ones subjugated the ones that were weaker next to them. And they would take resources, they would take slaves, they would take land, they would oftentimes take their women. That was how it was going on everywhere in the world. It's just now, recently, society somewhat evolved and become more civilized, and we have more, quote-unquote, peaceful relations going on. But the same concept still is in place. And so the idea of, you know, things being just or right, that's an old way of thinking. The world has changed, man. And the reality is, regardless of how you may feel about America, America became the number one military in the world and the number one economy in the world. That's just a fact. You can't ignore that.
Okay, let me ask you this question then, brother. Why is America paying the Native American money then?
Because they chose to. They didn't have to. Did the Native Americans force them to pay them?
Why would I come in and beat you up, take your house, and then turn around and say, okay, I'll pay you? Why would I
no,
do
no,
that?
No. You didn't hear my question,
based
brother.
On conquest,
did the Native Americans, hold on, answer my question, brother. Did the Native Americans force the American government to pay them, or did the American government voluntarily decide to do it?
Whether it was voluntary or not voluntary, then my thing is, why would I come into your house, take your house, and then turn around and pay you?
You gotta answer my question. Did the Native Americans force, by military force, did they force the American government to pay them or not?
Brother, that ain't got nothing to do with the price of tea.
That got everything to do with what I'm saying. That's my point exactly.
Why would I volunteer to pay you for your house that I took from you already?
That's my point. You just proved my point. The Americans, in the last 50 to 100 years, the civilization started embracing the ideas of human rights, the concept of justice. That's why the Americans even thought of the idea. For example, take slavery, right? Slavery was a worldwide institution. It was a massive, financially prosperous industry all over the world, right? In Britain and England, in England and America, you had a movement come up, abolitionist movements that wanted to end slavery and end the slave trade. Now, that entire movement was done voluntarily by people motivated by conscience. Not because the slaves rose up in a revolt and forced the Americans and the British to stop the slave trade. So when you talk about governments or organizations or people groups who voluntarily make changes in their society, that's on them. But what I'm talking about is when it's by force. So this land was taken by force. They didn't come in here and the Native Americans didn't hand it to them. The Europeans showed up and said, we're taking this. We see this great land with all these resources, and we're going to take it. And when they took it, no one stopped them. So once they got it, what did they do with it? They turned it into the most successful country in the history of mankind. This is a $15 to $20 trillion a year economy with the world's most powerful and expensive military that has ever existed in the history of mankind. You cannot deny that, man. That's just a reality. They did it. You may think it's wrong, you may disagree with it, but you cannot deny the result. They turned it into the most successful country ever, man. You got to give them credit for it. Whether you like it or not,
hold on a minute. Now, it's call drop, and he's back, and I'm going to mute your mic and bring him back in so he can get his point. Just hold on a minute now. Okay, Brother Yoel, you back now. Because your call dropped,
okay,
you back.
Well,
okay.
Well, yeah, it sounds like, first and foremost, that he admired this criminal. Then you need to go home and see what the hell. Well, maybe not, he had on. Because he sounds like he okay with what you fussing about his decadence and homosexuality for then. That's the culture here. If you don't like it, then what? You pack up and you go home. Okay, but he paid, I will say this, he decided he voluntarily paid him because he shamed him
for taking his land. So now he decided to pay him. But why should I have to shame you for taking something that's mine? And why would I pay you if I took it in the first place? With all my mighty war material and all that kind of stuff. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me. Okay? And when the time that you're talking about conquest, and the time that he's talking about you when the whole world is already falling down in decadence. Okay? So that's you when you were losing your consciousness of who you were. And that includes Africa, all of Africa, even Ethiopia. You mean to tell me you don't recall and you ain't been taught that at one time you had no war, you had no prison, and all of that kind of stuff? You didn't go to war with each other? You don't recall those days? They that old that you don't remember them or what? Because that doesn't make any sense to me.
Sounds like you're breaking up, Brother Uel. Hold on a minute.
Oh, okay. I was moving for a moment. But okay, so I'm just saying that if given, when you talk about conquest, when that African developed that mindset, he was already falling, okay, to in decadence himself to where he is right now today. Because Africans are doing Africans right now. So we know that they failed the decadence because they ain't right. They ain't the African they used to be. They're new African now. They doing each other. Even without the European involved, right? So I'm just saying that if you want to hinge this on he voluntarily paid him, I don't care. Just because you can come to me and you take my car, don't mean my car belong to you. That's still my car. Okay.
100%. We're gonna take a little break. I'm gonna mute your mic, and we're gonna go to the next segment, and we're gonna deal with this interracial dating. So y'all hold on a minute. As the thing continues, and we be back. And I certainly appreciate the brother calling in. Brother, you just hold on. We'll be right back with you. But we're gonna deal with. We're gonna be gone for a few minutes. We're gonna deal with the black generation. I'm gonna run this unplug, and then we can get down into that.
So all across social media, I hear these conversations about marrying other races, interracial marriage seems to be the answer because we can't get along with each other. We should just marry someone who doesn't look like us. But is that really what's happened? Is that really the case? In this video, we'll find out if the statistics bear out what social media says. Guys, welcome to Black Statistics. My name is Dr. Sherman Rivers, and in this video, we're going to talk about interracial marriage. You know, we have all these stereotypes about who's marrying who, and you hear a lot about black men are leaving the black community and they're marrying white women. And then you see on social media, you see these conversations where black women are saying they're tired of putting up with black men's mess, so they're going to marry white men. But again, I wanted to see if the statistics mirrored the conversations that I saw happening. What I found out is that they didn't. This is pretty interesting. If these are the kind of things that interest you, you know, the statistical data, what's really going on within the black population, the black community, you may want to subscribe to the channel because I'm going to be putting out a lot of videos talking about topics like this. Now, who this channel's not for, if you like the drama, the entertainment, the excitement, what's going on with this star and what's going on in the news here, it's probably not the right channel for you. I mean, some of these things come into play, but this is not a channel about what Jay-Z and Beyonce is doing. Okay, I'm not really concerned about that. I'm just looking at the facts, the data, and statistics. So if you're looking for a little more excitement like that, you probably don't want to subscribe to the channel. There are tons of other YouTube channels out there. I'm sure they'd be happy to have you. I'd be happy to have you here if you're interested in hearing this type of information. So if you're interested or open, subscribe. If you're not really, don't subscribe because all it does is hurt the algorithm. And I want to make content for people interested in hearing. So back to the topic. You know, there's a large misperception that there's so many black men that are marrying white women that it's actually reducing the rate at which black women get married or their ability to get married because all the black men are married out. Like you hear these statistics, you hear people say all the black men are either in jail, they play both sides of the field, or they're married. Now, that's not the case, but that's what we hear. It's all over social media. So let's go through some numbers and see what the numbers really say about interracial marriage. Now, first up, it's important to say that black men, according to the data, black men marry white women at twice the rate that black women marry white men. So there's twice as many black men marrying white women as there are black women marrying white men. Now, before we move forward, I think it's important to say that you don't just grab somebody and marry them. You just can't run up to somebody and snatch them up and say, you, and then you marry the person. The person has to want to marry you. So that statistic, twice as many black men marrying white women as there are black women marrying white men, there may be some more information buried beneath that. That's what I love about these statistics. They're not supposed to be the catch-all to answer all your questions definitively, but what it does is it gives you enough information to start asking more questions. And that's what it's really about, asking more questions. Is it just the black men just go out and pick who they want to marry and that's it? It's done? Or do the people that they want to marry have to pick them? And the same thing for a black woman. If she wants to go out and marry whoever she wants to marry, doesn't the person who she wants to marry have to want to marry her? So it's a two-way street. So there's more to that. But there are twice as many black men marrying white women as there are black women marrying white men. So let's go back to 2017. 2017, there were 15% of black men were married to non-black women. When I say non-black women, we're not saying white women. I'm saying women who weren't black. So that was 15%. That number was up. It was 11% in 2010. So over a seven-year stretch, that number went up. Now, in terms of how many of these women were white, three-fifths of those women were white. So say that 15% number, you have 100 men. And out of that 100, 15 are married to non-black women. And of that 15, 9 of them would be married to a white woman. So when somebody's married out of the race, doesn't necessarily mean it's not just a black and white thing. You know, you have Asian, Hispanic, you have all these other different races involved in this. So it's not just a black and white thing. So you had 15% of the men, black men, married non-black women, and three-fifths of those, which is 9, were married to white women. So it's great to tap into other studies, other sources of information that can kind of shine a light on things. So the Pew Research Center released a report that said in 2013, 25% of black male newlyweds. So 25% of the men, black men who got married in 2013 married non-black women, and that was compared to 12% of the black women newlyweds. Now that study also noted at that point that those 12% of black women who married out, quote unquote married out, that Asian women and white women still have higher rates of marrying outside of their race than black women do. So that's important to throw that in there too. We want the statistics, we want the facts. Facts are facts. You know, you can take them and skew them any way you want to. You can try to make a case for a point, a specific point. You can lie with statistics. You can take them and only say the parts that support your point and just leave out the rest. But I'm not here to do that. I just want to give you the facts, give you the data, give you the statistics so you can formulate your own opinions. And it opens the door for conversations. We want to talk about this stuff, right? So let's talk about the real, not what we perceive as real, not what we think. Social media has a way of putting you in this tunnel. And you start getting bombarded with the same message. It doesn't matter if the message is a lie. It doesn't matter if the information is inaccurate. It doesn't matter if it's dead wrong. You'll get more and more and more. And eventually you start believing it's true. Or the people around you will start believing it's true. So why don't we start with the real information? Let's just put it out there. and talk about it. Not just what it is, but why it is what it is. Got any idea why those numbers look the way they do? Please let me know in the comment section. I would be interested in knowing some of your opinions as to why you think these numbers are coming out the way that they are. So here's a caveat. So if you had 25% of newlyweds in 2013, black men marrying non-black women, that's 2013, 25% are doing this. But if 4 years later, in 2017, in 2017, it was interracial marriage, the rate was about black men, 15%. So if you had that many getting married in 2013 and the number's only 2015, I mean, only 15% in 2017, what does that tell you? And this is what I love about the data. What it tells you is that there was a drastic increase in marriages. Around that time, there was a drastic increase of black men marrying non-black women. And what that did was that pushed that number up to 15% in 2017. So had they not been having these marriages outside of or non-black women at that rate, that number in 2017 could have never got up to 15%. It would have been a lot lower than that. So what changed? What changed that triggered the interracial marriage thing to go up? Is it culture? Is everybody getting along better now? Are you having more black people, more white people that seem to feel like a common upbringing, common environment, common socioeconomic status? What is it? What's driving that? If you have any ideas about that, I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comment section. But what do you think it is that's causing that number to go up? Is it just black men and black women not getting along? Do black women want to marry black men? Do black men want to marry black women? I think the answer to that question will shock you. Let's continue. Let's move forward. And then moving forward, we're going to talk about the black women, the black women's perspective or the black woman's side as far as the numbers are concerned. We talked about black men. Let's talk about black women. Here's an interesting fact. Black women are the least likely to marry non-black men. According to the Pew Research study, that number was 7%. Here's an interesting fun fact. Of that 7%, only 4% were white men. Did you know that? So black women in 2017 married non-black men at a rate of 7%, and almost half of that were white men. So the other half, the other 3%, were Hispanics and Asians. Now, they married more white men than any of those other ones, but it was that whole 7% wasn't black women going out marrying white men, which is one of the things that you see a lot in social media, a lot on YouTube, the swirler community, things of that nature. It make it seem like you know, white black women are just running out marrying white men left and right. It goes back to my point earlier that I made, and this is not to take sides or anything. This is just asking questions to further the conversation. But you can't just go out and say, this is who I'm going to marry. You come here. It doesn't work that way. It's a two-way street. So that 7% number, what does that say? Does that mean that a smaller number of black women want to marry white men or Asian men or Hispanic men? Or does it say that these men from these other races, a smaller number of them want to marry black women? I think that's an interesting conversation. The overall number is what it is, but what's driving that number is what I want to know. What do you think? Anyhow, the bottom line is that when we think of black women marrying a non-black man, we tend to assume that the person that she married, the man that she married, is white. So it'll be interesting to see how that trend evolves going forward into the future. But I will say this. In 2018, black women were the only group that had a higher divorce rate than the marriage rate. Let me say that again. In 2018, black women were the only group that had a higher divorce rate than a marriage rate. So now, interestingly enough, at that time, there were nearly 31 divorces per 1,000 married women. 31 divorces per 1,000 married women aged 15 and older, and only 17.3 marriages per 1,000 unmarried women. So per 1,000 married women, there were 31 divorces, right? Per 1,000 married women, 31 divorces, but per 1,000 unmarried women, 17.3 marriages. So divorces here, marriages here. What is that going to look like going forward, going down the road? But ultimately, time will tell, but those are the numbers. This is how it really looks as far as interracial marriage is concerned. You know, more black men marry non-black women than black women marry non-black men. But what are the reasons behind that? What are driving the numbers? I think that opens the door for some great conversations. But if you like the video, if you like some of the information that was in the video, you think it's shareable, please like it, share it. Let's have a conversation. Let me know what you think. Down in.
Okay, everybody, we're back. I'm going over here. Seems that my other brothers, I don't know if his call is dropped or but he decided to leave. But area code 312. 312, you still with me?
Yes, sir, I'm still with you.
All right, you calm down over there, brother.
Hey, hey, Lord. Hey, I'm sorry. Yeah, but if the brother's still listening, I'll just say this to you. You got to be careful at who you can bring that conversation to right there with that he just brought because hold on a minute.
Okay.
I mean, what he said in essence was the Caucasian conquered this. You and what you think back rent and what you think you do for him coming in and invading your land and taking over, you need to shut the hell up. He conquered this. And if he choose to voluntarily pay you, then you might get some money. But if he don't, you need to shut the hell up, you and everybody who thinks like you. That's war talk right there. And it's an insult to us as a people. It's saying all of y'all crazy, shut the hell up and deal with it. We conquered it. Okay, that's first of all. So he was doing all right on the marriage thing. He was expressing what he being from Ethiopia, living in PA, his experience and how he sees his woman and his marriage. That was fine. But when you tried to tell the people to shut the hell up about this, even if it was your land, it ain't yours no more. You know, no. You know, I ain't going for that. That's an insult. You know, I can't let him get away with that. Him and nobody else.
Okay.
But anyway, I have now this interracial dating. I have not.
Okay.
I live in one of the third largest city in the country, Chicago.
Okay.
Now,
okay,
I have yet to see a sister married to an Asian. Now, I know my city is like being down south. This is up south, like Malcolm said, and it's still segregated here in Chicago, much as other people in other places, they might be mixing and mingling, like in New York and places like that, and maybe California or something, but here I have yet to see in my 60-plus years and my 40-plus, 40 of those in the city of Chicago, a sister with an Asian. Not to mention, I've seen one sister with a Mexican. That's about it. So in other words, I'm saying that in Chicago, I don't see his statistics going that way, so I'd have to question his statistics and who's putting them together and where they come from. Now, I would probably go a little bit easier with the men with women. I mean, black men marrying white women, but I don't see that either. I see more sisters with white men than I see brothers with white women, you know. So I just don't see it in Chicago, where maybe they're showing up and they're doing these statistics off of some other city. But because I know they know Chicago is segregated, seriously segregated, okay? So maybe they're getting them from somewhere else. But I
I think that, yeah, the sisters, but then the question comes down to this for sisters and ourselves is what we got, what, how much are we willing to go through to stick to your people? Are you willing to say, okay, I tried a black woman a couple of times, I'm finna speak, forget that, I'm done with them. Or three times and three strikes and they out and they were successful and now it's, that's three strikes. I look at that as three strikes and it's over for black women. I'm going to white women or whatever other women, you know. Then, you know, that's that person's reality. That becomes that person's reality, new reality. Now he finna go messing with some other ethnic groups. And it's vice versa for women. If they gave brothers three strikes and they out, and they decided to open the, widen their playing field and go for white men or Asian, as he said, and other and Spanish folks, then okay, that's what they choose to do. But it comes back to how much are you willing to do this? Because I go back to the African saying that goes, it's not so much as what's good for you when it comes to marriage and the other person. It's what's good for you, what's good for the families, what's good for the community and the society at large. And if that's not a good marriage, then that's not a good marriage. I'm sorry. I can't go there. You know, over here the way they do it is, well, a guy wants to marry this woman, and the father and the mother got a problem with him because he's sagging his pants and stuff. He off the streets, you know. He may be disrespectful in his appearance and not in his language as well, in his attitude. But over here, they'll say, the Caucasian will say, don't worry about them. I give you a marriage license. You can marry her anyway. But, and whether or not, and that's against the father's and the mother's wishes, he might talk that woman into going to marry him anyway and saying, forget your mom and your daddy. We love each other. But that ain't how it worked where we were a long time ago. Okay? That wasn't what we were then. So when we talk about here, what we were doing here, you went to the woman's daddy or parent and asked them for their daughter's hand in marriage. And if they disagree with it, like I said, you know, they saw something what was improper, and he was from a family maybe, or a family of Fuki and Ray Rays or something, and they didn't like that, then that wasn't no marriage. It's not going to happen. Sorry. Like in Africa, for instance, I don't care how old you get, your parents still alive, they choose husbands for you. Now, that's a good concept in one way, because guess what? You ain't going to go by how cute he is. That parent ain't going to go by how cute he is. He's going to look at his family. He's going to look at him, his attitude and everything and all of this kind of stuff, you know, where that woman is just looking at, oh, he just sees little tweaky birds and love hearts in her eyes. She just loves this guy. He cute and I love it. She blinded by all of that. So, you know, that's the way I see it, Shaka. Are you there? Am I still there? Chaka. Okay. Well, anyway, I guess it's just me on the show right now.
So, no, I'm right here with you. I had to,
okay,
for some reason or another, I don't know what the problem is, but for some reason or another, doing the broadcast, stuff stopped breaking up. I can't figure it out. I don't know why this kind of stuff be going on, man. But I'm getting kind of tired of this here business here. But anyway, we're down to 8 minutes, and what I want to do is read this book list into the broadcast again, and keep in mind I'm going to send you a copy of it. The first book I want to bring the audience attention to again is The Black Woman's Guide to Understanding the Black Man by Scheherazade Ali. Then we have The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman by Scheherazade Ali. Then we have Blueprint for Black Power by Professor Amos N. Wilson. Then we have The ABCs of Writing Winning Business Plans by Garrett Sutton. The next is Protecting Your Number One Asset by Michael A. Lecter. Next is Own Your Corporation by Garrett Sutton. Then we have Love by the Numbers by Glynis McCants. The next is The Secret Science of Black Male and Female Sex by T.C. Carrier. The next is The Developmental Psychology of the Black Child by Professor Amos N. Wilson. Then we have The Magic of Thinking Big by David J. Schwartz. And then we have The Huguenot, Bartholomew DuPuy, His Descendants by Reverend B.H. DuPuy. Then we have Edgar Casey on Atlantis by Edgar Evans Casey. And then we got The Bernhardt Concise Dictionary of Etymology. And then we got The Etymological Dictionary of the English Language. And then we got Moors and Masonry by Brother Abdullah L. Talib Bosiah Bey. And the final book is The Emerald Tablets of Hermes and the Kabbalion. Let me add, Brother UL, first of all, and I keep trying to get people to understand this here, because the brother was trying to tell us how great that America is and how powerful it is and the richest country in the world and stuff. But let me deal with this little money segment. For instance, the United States of America had the Treasury Department that prints out paper currency by the tons. But there is absolutely not one single ounce of gold backing up not one single dollar. So how much money does America have? Zero. Now, we come to consciousness, and the situation goes this way. If as long as you believe that you got money, and keep in mind, you ain't got no gold backing it up, so you ain't got no money. So you you are in the belief that this fiat currency is money, and that America is supposed to be so wealthy and powerful. And the reason why is because people believe this stuff. It doesn't have anything to do with the realization of the facts of money and what money is and what real money is and what false money is not. It doesn't have anything to do with that. Then we have the situation where, and this is one of the reasons why I'm having these broadcasts and stuff, so that people will wake up and really gain some consciousness and understand, number one, who you are and what is rightfully yours to have. This is your land. You didn't come from someplace else. They kidnap you from Virginia and sell you in Jamaica. And then they'll go over there in Mississippi, kidnap you from there and sell you in Georgia, and then go up to Chicago, kidnap you there and sell you down in Alabama. So this is the kind of thing that's going on, because I see that people still have this thing in mind that of slavery, where they bought all these Africans over here from slavery and put them in America, which is simply not true, man. We had we got the people in Africatown, which is supposed to be the last ship, slave ship that came here. That settlement's there. Then we got the Gullah Geechees up there in Virginia and the Carolinas and stuff that they bought here. But outside of that, all this slavery business with all these millions of people that are supposed to come over here was a lie. And the reason why we're under such an attack, because the Europeans know that this is your land. The Native Indians, they came here from Palestine. They went up in the Palestinian mountains and got them. The Polynesians are the ones done that. They come from down from South America, brought them over here and put them on this land. And to this day, when people come from, even the Palestinian Liberation Army comes from overseas over here, the first people they want to see is the Native American Indians, because those are their relatives. But we are here, and we've always been here, and the hard part that people have is the fact that they can't fathom in their mind that we didn't come from somewhere. They got a whole lot of historical jargon and stuff in their mind, but the only thing I'm telling you is the facts, and the facts that I'm telling you can be verified. But anyway, we're down to three minutes. Brother Yoel, you want to give us your 411 and have we get a hold to you, get them books, man?
Yes, sir. Okay. At Underground Bookstore in Chicago, okay, 1727 East 87th Street in Chicago. Telephone number 773-768-8869. 773-768-8869. Or you can email me at undergroundbookstore1@gmail.com. undergroundbookstore1@gmail.com. That's how they can get in touch with me, and I'd be happy to get those books, and many of them, those I already have. If they want to purchase those books, then they can give me a call or email me. Website is being repaired, so that's it. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And thank everybody for listening, and thank the brother for at least weighing in on the marriage portion.
Well, I certainly appreciate the brother calling in. And keep in mind, next week, next Sunday night, which will be on the 30th of October, me and Dr. Walter Williams will be on. And what I'm going to do with this book list is I'm going to put it in an email and send it over there to you. There's only one book on the list that did not come out of my library. And that book is, and it's a very, very important book for us to read, because this it's about the Huguenots, and it tells you about the Moors and stuff up there in the Carolinas and stuff. And the name of the book is The Huguenot, Bartholomew Dupuy, His Descendants, by Reverend B.H. Dupuy. And it's got a lot of information on it about the Moors and stuff, and it's just stuff that's coming out, and this stuff is coming out by the tons of now about us and our culture and our ancient story in this hemisphere. I didn't tell the brother that in Africa, you got over 640 plants species in Africa, and out of that 640, 600 of them came from the Americas to Africa. And this is a lot of the stuff that people don't know. And it may appear that America is great and all of this stuff, but when we get down to the nitty-gritty and the fabric and we start tearing this thing apart, we start looking at a whole lot of different things. But anyway, Brother UL, I certainly appreciate you being on, man. And what we're going to do is go ahead and shut this thing down. We got 27 seconds left. And I'll send the email and stuff over there to you with the books and stuff. But tonight, I'll go ahead and convert this thing on into a video and put this stuff on up on YouTube.
Okay,
anyway,
make sure you send that last one, conclude that last one you mentioned too.
Oh, yes, I'm definitely going to put that in there, man. That's the only one
okay.
I ain't got over here in my library. All right, I'm going to mute your mic, and we're going to go and shut on down. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I certainly appreciate y'all being here. And I hope y'all got something out of the broadcast. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and I'll see you next time.